And of course, if anybody comes in as an attendee and we need to promote up, we can easily do that as well. Okay, I think we've stabled off. Rolling. Ladies and gentlemen, we are recording and broadcasting. You are welcome to start the meeting.
Thank you, Bob. Good morning, everybody. My name is Adam Sferro. I'm currently the chairperson of the State Historical Resources Commission, and I am now going to convene this meeting and begin its session. So you might hear a smack on my desk, and that's a pretend gavel on my pretend desk. Today's meeting of the State Historical Resources Commission has been duly noticed. Any and all of the agenda items are subject to action by the commission. So commissioners, staff, members of the public, please stand where you are and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
to the United States of America.
And to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation
under God,
indivisible,
liberty and justice for all.
Everybody muted except for me and Julie on that one, so it was a bit of a duet, and that's okay. I think we did it well. I want to acknowledge that this is now the second virtual meeting of the State Historical Resources Commission. Everything's been in person up until the last meeting and this one. And there is another member of this entire group that is ever present, and that is technology. So we are relying on technology to get us through this meeting. And that includes mute and unmute and telephone calls to Bob and Travis, who I will read phone numbers off shortly, to get help if needed. So I'd just like to ask for everyone's patience as we work through this medium. We've found it successful in the past, and I think we're going to make this the best meeting we can and make sure that all of these nominations are heard and all of the public's voices are heard, as well as commission and staff. And I'd like to thank everybody in advance for putting all of their time and effort into this meeting and everything you do to lead up to it. There's a lot of work behind the scenes, and those people are not seen on this screen, but their work is appreciated. I'll now move to introductions of commission and staff. Again, my name is Adam Sferro. I am from Culver City. I represent archaeology, and I'm currently the chair. And then I will ask Lee to introduce himself.
Good morning, Lee Adams, public member of the commission from Downeyville in Sierra County.
Ryan?
Hey, good morning, everybody. Brian Brandis. I represent the public and now living in Oakland.
Renee?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Renee Volanowith. I am a professor of archaeology at California State University, Los Angeles, and I represent archaeology, and I'm glad to be here and glad for everybody to join us.
Janet?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Janet Hansen. I represent the field of history on the commission, and I am from Palm Springs.
Alan.
I'm Alan Hess. I represent architecture, and I am from Irvine, California.
Luis.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Luis Hoyos. I cover architectural history, and I teach architecture at Cal Poly Pomona.
And now I'd like to introduce you to Julie Polanco, who is the State Historic Preservation Officer, who will introduce her staff.
Good morning. It's my honor to be your State Historic Preservation Officer. I come to you today from Marin County, which is the traditional home of the Coast Miwok people, many of whose modern members are modern people are members of the Federated Indians of the Great and Rancheria. I'd like to introduce our Deputy Shipo Janon Saunders, our head of the Registration Unit, Jay Korea, excellent registration unit staff, Amy Crane and William Berg, and California Parks Chief Counsel and ROHP Counsel, Tara Lynch. Thank you all for these are really the folks behind the meeting and the ones that really work hard to put this together for you every day. And so I'm delighted to introduce you to our great staff. Thank you, Adam. Adam, you're on mute.
Thank you. I'm now off mute, and you would have heard me say some bad words realizing I was on mute. So don't be like me. What I was saying was we are very lucky to carve out a little bit of time out of this very important person's schedule. Armando Quintero, the recently appointed head of California State Parks, has graced us with his presence today for a welcome. So Armando, please take that away.
Thank you so much. And I'm the one that's humbled to be a part of this group, or to be asked to join your meeting, and also certainly to be asked to be the director of State Parks. It's something that I never imagined. Well, good morning, Chair Spiro, Commissioners, and the State Historic Preservation Officer Polanco. The role of the State Historical Resources Commission has actually been woven into many aspects of my career paths with public lands and historic resources since 1976. From my first jobs at the John Muir Home to Sequoia National Park, Point Reyes National Seashore, and Golden Gate National Recreation, I've had the honor of not only meeting individuals related to well-known California heritage names, is how I think of them, but I've been able to work in historic settings with indigenous leaders. I got to care for a lighthouse, and I have spent much of my life exploring the worlds of California. And as Julie acknowledged that she is from Marin, calling in from Marin County, I too am joining you from Marin County, where 36 years ago, or 34 years ago, the Kashaya Pomo leaders held a mourning ceremony for my father in the roundhouse in this county when he passed away suddenly. So it is with a profound sense of connection to this place that I join you. You know, I looked at your agenda, and the list of nominations that you're considering today are diverse and amazing. And I actually dreamt about the work you do last night, and I'm not kidding. And there was a phrase that appeared in my dream, and it literally said, "You are setting the altar." And I think about the importance of the work that you all do, and the list of nominations that you're considering not only are diverse and amazing, but you help protect the heritage of many generations of people in California from all walks of life. You remove barriers from the stories that should be revealed and are revealed, and they're important and they will become known. And looking at your list of nominations that you're considering today, you know, I noted a couple. One of them is the Mission Cultural Center, where you're acknowledging this program, which brings recent and contemporary stories to light of the communities here. The Chinese Shrimp Camp in Richmond, it actually creates a much more complete picture of the role of the Chinese community in the North Bay of San Francisco. And I'd also like to make a special acknowledgement. The State Historic Preservation Officer Polanco sent me a photograph of the Futuro House, of a Futuro House. And the inclusion of that in this list really demands that I acknowledge the career and the work that is continued by former SHPO Wayne Donaldson. And so really, you are all doing this work really as a part of your life. And I so appreciate this. And the diversity of structures and sites on the agenda today continues that important work. And it's work that you do for not only California, but the world. Thank you so much. And I do want to let you know that I am going to be observing the movie. I'm going to be observing your meeting on the public portal for the remainder of your meeting. And with that, again, thanks so much to each of you for your service.
Thank you, Armando.
Thank you so much, Armando, for being with us.
Okay, next we move over to resolutions. There are two on the agenda, but I'd like to inform everybody that the County of Los Angeles CLG resolution will be pushed to the quarter one meeting of 2021. So instead, we have a single resolution that we will read for Tail and Cobb, and I will do that right now. The State Historical Resources Commission resolution number 2020-02, resolution of recognition, Talen J. Cobb. Whereas in 2020, Talen J. Cobb participated in the National History Day California competition as a student at Pomona High School in Pomona, Los Angeles County. And whereas the theme of this year's competition, Breaking Barriers in History, promoted the study of encounters with new people, ideas, cultures, and environments, encounters that may cause conflict, challenge long-held beliefs, help broaden ideas, and give rise to new perspectives. And whereas Talen's project entitled Breaking Barriers in Academia, the First Black Student Union, was entered into the Individual Documentary Senior Division category and was selected for a California Historic Places Award. And whereas California Historic Places Award recipients receive a resolution from the State Historical Resources Commission, a $100 check, and a one-year membership for the student and the school from the California Historical Society, and a copy of the book, The Historic Preservation Movement in California, from the Office of Historic Preservation for the school library. Now, therefore, be it resolved that official recognition on behalf of the State Historical Resources Commission is given to Talen J. Cobb for an outstanding 2020 National History Day in California entry, and be it further resolved that this resolution be recorded in the minutes of the State Historical Resources Commission and a suitable copy presented to Talen J. Cobb, November 6, 2020, signed by myself, Chairperson Adam Cerrero, and Julie Polanco, Executive Secretary. So congratulations, Talen. That sounds like an amazing achievement. And unfortunately, Talen is not here to receive the award. It'll be mailed to him, and I think he all knows how much we appreciate his hard work.
Bravo.
Bravo. Next, we move to approval of the August 14, 2020 summary of the meeting. Tara, would you like to do a roll call on that, I believe?
Mr. Chairman, I think we need a motion.
Sorry, I skipped a step.
In discussion.
Well, I'll make a motion to approve.
Thanks. Sorry, Brian. Jumped ahead.
I'll second.
You have a second from Renee, Adam.
Great. Thank you. So we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. Now may I ask for a roll call?
Yes. Adams.
Aye.
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen. Hansen.
You can do it, Janet. You have a mute button.
Wait, you just put yourself back on mute, so just take it off and try it one more time.
That's weird. Okay. Great. Aye. Thank you. Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay is not present. Volanowith.
Aye.
Truro.
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0-0.
Thank you, Tara. I'm going to go off my speaker points instead of just the agenda moving forward, because that's where I missed it. All right. I have no chairperson's report. So we're on to staff reports, I believe. So Julie, do you have an executive secretary report you'd like to present?
I do, thank you. I will hold the Chris updates to the end when we have that on the agenda, but I'd like to report a couple of staff changes. We have a new historian who started in our office last week. Her name is Susan Negrete. We're very excited to have that position filled. And we still are actively pursuing filling the two vacancies in our archaeological supervisor, as well as our fiscal and grants coordinator. So stay tuned for that, but we are We are getting fully up to speed. I'm also pleased to announce that in lieu of the absence of filling the archaeological supervisor, an environmental review unit supervisor, we have provided Brendan Greenaway as an acting supervisor opportunity. So we are able to take one of our existing archaeological staff and give him the opportunity to act as a supervisor in that capacity to get some experience. We're really excited to be able to do that as well. We've had some fits and starts with many of the contracts that we've put in place that got sort of stuck in the budget and the COVID situation, but I'm absolutely happy to report that the California missions from the tribal experience, multiple property submission document that we're putting together, that contract is in place. So we're very excited that will finally be able to start and work with our tribal partners to add that very important voice to a known history and to update the nomination for La Purisima mission in Ventura County. We also are working with the Scripps Institute on a climate vulnerability assessment framework. That contract has just started as well, and it's a really exciting opportunity to take the way in which people look at assessing climate threats and future conditions of sites to include culture and communities, indigenous communities and adjacent communities, to the conversation at the beginning to really understand what value and significance means to the site, so that those values are accounted for and incorporated in whatever plans go forward. We are working with some international partners on that task, particularly those in Australia who created this framework, and then our partners at Historic Environment Scotland through an MOU that we have with them. So we're really excited about both of those projects to get started. In the realm of the California Cultural Resources Climate Change Task Force, Jesse Ochoa-Diaz has been actively working on the gap analysis we're working on to understand all of the state government's ambition in climate change and overlay where culture can play a role in adding value to projects for multiple outcomes, or where it can help change human behavior through the social cohesion that culture brings. But most importantly, putting communities into the climate change conversation for greater ambition. We are on target to have that gap analysis completed by the end of the year, at which point we're going to be going around the state with the leaders of the task force, engaging the public and our tribes with an aim to have some policy suggestions to the state of California in fall of next year for the update of Safeguarding California 2018, which is the state's climate ambition document that addresses all of the work that our sister agencies are doing. As part of that work, we also are part of standing up a group called the Climate Heritage Network. I think you've heard me talk about this before. And 2 years, we have 250 global members who are really working in this space and sharing stories and opportunities in this time of urgent action, and marrying with the governor's most recent also announcement about biodiversity and the things that the state's ambition. The Climate Heritage Network has created what's called Climate by Culture. It's a 45-day festival of seminars from people around the world talking about what they're doing in the space of culture and climate action, from museums to artists to indigenous communities. We are participating as well, and I'll put the links up in our website so people can follow along with those sessions, those educational sessions. They're occurring in global time, so some are not friendly to California in time zones, but they will be recorded and eventually available on the climateheritage.org website. But it's a really amazing collection of examples of what people are doing around the world. And I really encourage people who are interested to participate. I believe that all of the sessions are also free to the public. We have this year participated in the TIPO Summit. Again, very successful. This year was the year for the TIPOs themselves. We will again next year engage with the TIPO SHPO Summit. I think those opportunities for us to hear from tribes and agencies and really have a conversation outside of consultations is really important to relationship building, to greater understanding, and to better stewardship of resources. And so the learning and the sharing that go on in those couple of days are really just so valuable, and we're happy to both support them and participate in them as well. To that end, next week, I am participating in the Governor's California Tribal Conference. We'll be talking about the work we're doing in climate action and sharing the stage with our cultural partners in parks and the State Library to talk about the work that we're doing in partnership with tribes. And again, just a really important opportunity, and so glad to be part of those conversations. We have a lot of giant programmatic agreements in our office. And like Armando, I sometimes wake up thinking that they really turn into these big monsters in my head. But there's a lot of work going on, a lot of infrastructure work. And I think that, as usual, we have an amazing staff who are doing such a great job of really zeroing in on the important points of these consultations, helping ensure that the public is meaningfully consulted with. And then also trying to move as quickly as we can on getting the consultations completed so that the projects that are very necessary to our communities, to our health and safety, are implemented. So I'll stop there. I'm happy to answer any questions. And in a moment, I'll put some of the links to those pages in the chat so that they're there for the public as well. And I just want to just again acknowledge the amazing work our staff is doing in this time of COVID. They really have kept up with the workload incredibly well and have barely missed a beat. And I think it's a great credit to both their talent and their capacity and their resiliency. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Are there any questions for Shippo Polanco? No? Okay, thanks again, Julie. Moving on, I'd like to give a kind of brief description on how the public participation will work for this meeting leading into our consent calendar items. If you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items or you want to make a comment during open comment period, you must be using Zoom or calling in by your phone. If you're currently watching the webcast on CalSpan, but you do want to comment, you've got to register using the link at www.ohp.parks.ca.gov/SHRC notices. And that link is at the end of the first bold paragraph on the page. You'll receive an email with a link and phone number for this meeting. We'll be calling speakers in order identified in the meeting notice and within each category of speaker in the order in which you registered for the meeting. After we go through those attendees who registered for specific agenda items, we'll ask for anyone else who may want to speak on the agenda items by raising their hands. If you are only calling in by telephone, you dial *9 to raise your hand. We'll call each commenter by name and allow that person to speak, and the commenters will then need to unmute themselves. If you're calling in by phone, you do this by pressing *6. Please note you will not appear by video during your public comments. And I'd like to remind everyone, commenters, board members, staff, anyone, to please state your name for the record before you speak. And if you're speaking on behalf of an organization, state the organization's name. During public testimony, you'll see a timer on the screen. Speakers get 3 minutes. If you experience technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3576 or email it@agpvideo.com and somebody will help you. For commissioners, if anyone needs to step away, please let us know just so that we can keep the quorum. Now, going on to consent calendar, the commission will now hear nominations and any comments concerning the eligibility of nominated properties for the National Register of Historic Places, and I believe we have some others for California Register and Points of Historic Interest. The commission will make any type of judgments based on the evidence presented, including the nomination and any comments received regarding the nomination and the nominated properties, including testimony presented at this meeting. The commission will determine whether the property or properties meets the criteria of the applicable register program. For nominations to the National Register of Historic Places, the commission will then make a recommendation to the State Historic Preservation Officer regarding forwarding the nomination to the keeper of the National Register of Historic Places for action by the keeper. The commission only considers evidence relating specifically to the applicable register criteria and not any social or economic matters related to a nomination or a nominated property. All properties that are listed are determined eligible for a listing in the National Register of Historic Places are automatically listed in the California Register of Historical Resources. Furthermore, all properties listed in the California Registered Historical Landmark Program, including and following landmark number 770, automatically listed in the California Register of Historical Resources. Nominations are on the consent calendar because the Office of Historic Preservation is not aware of any opposition to the nominations. Information concerning the nominations on the consent calendar has been forwarded to each commissioner prior to this meeting and is on file with the Office of Historic Preservation. Unless a member of the audience or a commissioner requests that a nomination on the consent calendar be withdrawn from the consent calendar, the commission will not hear testimony on the nominations and will vote on the consent calendar nominations in a single motion. If a nomination is withdrawn from the consent calendar, the commission will hear testimony and consider such nomination later in the meeting. So is there any member of the audience that requests a nomination be withdrawn from the consent calendar? And Deputy Shippo Janon Saunders will now look for hands raised if need be.
We have one hand raised. It's a Robert Fruchtman. I'm going to allow you to talk, Mr. Fruchtman. You need to unmute yourself.
Good morning, commissioners. I would ask that you withdraw nomination A5 for Buon Gusto from the single motion and considered separately. Thank you. Is that the end of my public comment, or can I keep going?
Up to you, Adam. Yeah. I think that's all we need to know.
That's all we need to know.
Okay, thank you.
So as far as a procedural step, maybe Janon or Tara or Julie, you can answer this. Do we then move that to an unagenda discussion, or do we postpone hearing that nomination until the following meeting?
We move it to discussion and action in this meeting.
Okay.
So it'll be removed from the consent calendar and it'll be heard after the consent calendar.
Great. All right. So we'll move forward with consent. I'm sorry.
I have a second hand raised. I have a second raised hand. Let me, I believe it's Sarah Ogilvy. Based upon your phone number, I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself.
Yes, I would like to second the motion that, I would like to second the suggestion from Robert Fruchtman to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, I should ask if there are any other hands at this point.
There are no other hands.
Very well. So we're going to move Buon Gusto to discussion, but we'll hear the entire consent calendar first before we move to that item. Is there any commissioner that requests a nomination be withdrawn from the consent calendar? Are there any commissioners that wish to recuse him or herself from hearing the consent calendar? Are there any commissioners that wish to disclose discussions with any parties on matters listed on the consent calendar? Okay, so the commission then welcomes comments on the consent calendar items following a vote. Any person wishing to address the commission on a consent calendar item, but not wishing to remove it from consent calendar, should have submitted a speaking request to the Office of Historic Preservation via the OHP website prior to this meeting. The SHRC has a list of those who have requested to speak regarding properties on the consent calendar. We will identify when it is time for those members of the public to address the commission following action on the consent calendar. The Office of Historic Preservation staff will now present information about each of the properties on the consent calendar. And I'd like to request that commission would all go on mute while that is being done.
Benicia City Cemetery is a 20.12-acre burial ground located in Benicia, Solano County, home to over 4,000 interments, first established in 1847, located on a hill with sweeping views of the city of Benicia and the Carquinez Strait. Character-defining features include mature trees and shrubbery, the plot grid pattern, a collection of grave markers, monuments, and vaults, the roadway circulation pattern, and larger plots delineated with fencing or curbs. 8 objects and 2 sites are called out as contributing features, including the Cox family and Hooper family burial vaults, 1 Felipe Pena and Ada Hook Bowie grave markers, Johnson family and Mullaney family monuments, and the Mary Atkins Lynch monument. The cemetery retains a high degree of historic integrity, reflecting its period of significance. The property is eligible under Criterion A in the area of exploration settlement, with a period of significance of 1847 to 1878, as one of the oldest municipal cemeteries in California. The property meets the requirements of Criteria Consideration D, cemeteries, because its significance is derived from its age and association with historic events. The Benicia City Cemetery contains the graves of numerous persons who made outstanding contributions to the history of the city and the region. It is the final resting place of not only Benicia's early settlers, but also several earliest settlers of other Solano County communities who are also of great importance to Benicia's history. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the Benicia Cemetery History Committee. The property owner, the City of Benicia, has not removed provided comment. The nomination has received 1 letter of support from the Benicia Historical Museum. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Benicia City Cemetery eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion A at the local level of significance with a period of significance of 1847 to 1878. King Edward Hotel is a 6-story Beaux-Arts commercial building constructed in 1905 located in downtown Los Angeles. There are 2 street-facing elevations. The East 5th Street, facing south, is 5 bays wide, arranged in an alternating 2-window, 3-window sequence with a vertical brick pattern between each bay, creating the impression of pilasters. The lobby entrance is located in the 2nd westernmost bay, with an iron and steel glass canopy, built in 1914, over the recessed entrance, beneath an ornate crosshead with corbels. The east elevation on South Los Angeles Street is 3 bays wide, with its ground floor occupied by the King Eddie Saloon. The property is nominated under Criterion A in the areas of commerce and social history, and Criterion C in the area of architecture. In the area of commerce, the King Edward Hotel was an early redevelopment of this block of downtown Los Angeles, spurred by completion of the nearby Pacific Electric Railway downtown terminal. By the 1930s, Los Angeles Union Station steered business travelers away from the King Edward, which transitioned to residential hotel, or SRO, single room occupancy, use, catering to working class people and the elderly. The property is also eligible in the area of social history as the site of the King Eddie Saloon, a long-term cultural and social landmark that opened as a restaurant and soda fountain during Prohibition. The operator's decision to fill in the soda fountain's windows with wood and plaster and expand restaurant operations into the cellar, decorated with a German Rotzkeller theme, strongly suggests that the soda fountain was also a speakeasy. In 1933, this soda fountain obtained one of Los Angeles' first legal alcohol licenses following the end of Prohibition. Under Criterion C, the hotel is a locally significant example of Beaux-Arts architecture designed by master architect John Parkinson, designer of the Homer Laughlin Building, now the Grand Central Market, and the Brayley Building, Los Angeles' first skyscraper. The property is nominated by a consultant working on behalf of the property owner. No letters of support or objection have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the King Edward Hotel eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C at the local level of significance, with a period of significance of 1905 to 1933. Santa Cruz Island Archaeological District Amendment and Boundary Increase. This amendment to the existing Santa Cruz Island Archaeological District off the coast of Santa Barbara County encompasses the Aboriginal archaeological resources on Santa Cruz Island, one of the Channel Islands off the coast of Southern California. Since its original 1979 listing, the number of formally recorded sites was increased from 450 to 1,038, spanning a period of approximately 10,000 years ago to 1822, when the last of the Aboriginal inhabitants came to the mainland. Occupants at the beginning of the Spanish colonization were the island Chumash, hunter-gatherer fishers with unusually complex socio-political and economic systems. The district includes both federal and private land, and the amendment expands the boundary to include a portion of federal land excluded from the original district. The nomination is limited to archaeological resources. The property is nominated under criteria A and D at the national level of significance in the area of archaeology, both pre-contact and historic Aboriginal, and ethnic heritage Native American, with a period of significance of 8000 BC to 1822. The archaeological sites have an unusually high degree of stratigraphic integrity when compared to mainland sites. Because of the potential of these sites to contribute to the understanding of hunting-gathering societies throughout North America, particularly those that utilized marine resources or had complex forms of social organization, and the long-term habitation of the site, providing the opportunity to gain new insights into the nature of the initial expansion of populations along the Pacific coast of North America, the property is nominated at the national level of significance. The amendment was written for National Park Service as a federal nomination, but includes new contributing sites on the public-held portion of the island and new sites on the private-held side. The private property owner, the Nature Conservancy, has been informed of the nomination. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Santa Cruz Island Archaeological District Amendment and Boundary Increase eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under criteria A and D at the national level of significance, with a period of significance of 8000 BC to 1822. Oakland Auditorium, later renamed the Henry J. Kaiser Convention Center, is a large rectangular Beaux-Arts building located at the southern end of Lake Merritt near downtown Oakland. Completed in 1913, the building's Beaux-Arts features include classical massing, monumental scale, symmetrical facades, light-colored masonry walls, and decorative elements including pilasters, garlands, and floral details. The building has a side-gabled roof with decorative parapets that extend slightly above the roofline. Measuring approximately 400 by 200 feet, the building has four floors, accessed by a system of ramps in addition to stairs and elevators. The east end of the building houses the arena, and the west end, the theater. The building is steel frame and reinforced concrete construction, with a three-hinged arched roof truss system to create large, open interior spaces. Its principal north facade is monolithic with granite cladding and monumental niches. While the north wall is the primary facade, the building was designed with all four walls as de facto building fronts. In addition to the arena and theater spaces, the auditorium includes two large galleries, the Gold Room and the Olympic Room, and associated support spaces, offices, and dressing rooms. The property is nominated under criterion A in the areas of entertainment and recreation, and under criterion C for its architecture. The Oakland Auditorium is locally significant as one of Oakland's most important and longest-running public facilities, the city's principal venue for major entertainment events from its construction until the opening of the Oakland Coliseum in 1966. The building's design was a collaboration between architect John Joseph Donovan, who designed the building exterior, sculptor Alexander Sterling Calder, who designed the statuary and details of the building, and engineer Maurice Couchot, who designed the building's steel truss frame that created the large volumes of uninterrupted space within the building envelope. The property is nominated by a consultant working on behalf of the property owner. No letters of support or objection have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Oakland Auditorium eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C at the local level of significance, with a period of significance of 1913 to 1966. Consent calendar. Staff reports will continue with the Chinese Shrimp Camp National Register nomination presented by Amy Crane.
Next. Thank you. Chinese Shrimp Camp, also known as CACCO506H, represents the remains of a shrimp camp occupied by Chinese American fishermen from circa 1870 until circa 1912. The site is located on the eastern edge of San Francisco Bay, northeast of San Francisco. At its peak, the camp contained 30 shacks, 5 wharves, and 10 boats. The buildings and structures have been razed, though 2 earthen jetties remain. Next. Archaeological and geomorphological testing have determined that the site is covered with a significant amount of modern fill, reaching more than 6 feet in depth in some areas. Intact features and archaeological deposits have been identified that include information related to site typology, technology, and labor practices. Constituents include a variety of artifacts and ecofacts such as consumption containers, tableware, hardware, gaming pieces, known as hakchu, possible shrimping tackle, domestic and wild faunal remains, and other refuse. Next. This information may usefully be compared with other similar shrimp camp sites located within the region. Chinese Shrimp Camp is nominated at the local level under criteria A and D in the areas of ethnic heritage Asian, Chinese, archaeology, historic non-Aboriginal, maritime history, and industry. Next. The site has potential to yield information that may be used to address the interrelated research themes of site typology, technology, and labor practices, and community identity. Intact archaeological deposits, coupled with historic documentation, offer information related to an immigrant community providing a single service. The period of significance encompasses occupation of the camp from circa 1870 until circa 1912. The presence of other Chinese shrimp camps on San Francisco Bay offers the opportunity for comparative analysis with similar sites, providing a further avenue for potential research. Next. As a property type associated with Chinese American labor in the fishing and processing industries, the Chinese shrimp camp meets the registration requirements of the Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in California, 1850 to 1970, multiple property submission. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner, the City of Richmond. The Historic Preservation Commission, in its role as representative of the City of Richmond, a certified local government, received a copy of the nomination. Next. 4 letters of support have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Chinese Shrimp Camp is eligible under National Register criteria A and D at the local level of significance with an 1870 to 1912 period of significance and meets the registration requirements of the AAPI in California MPS. Next. Hotel Menlo is a 7-story, almost 32,000 square foot building at the corner of 13th and Webster Streets. The Renaissance Revival style hotel was completed in 1914. Between 2018 and 2020, the property was converted into 66 affordable apartments with an approved Part II Historic Preservation Certification application. The project is scheduled to be completed in November 2020. The building's massing forms a modified W shape with 3 prominent wings at the upper stories on the main facade on 13th Street. Next. The 2 street facades share a classical 3-part composition, with the ground floor and the rusticated terracotta second floor as the base, the 3rd through 7th floors faced in buff brick as the shaft, and the prominent copper cornice as the capital. The ground floor of the 2 street facades consists mostly of storefronts. The main residential entry is at the center of the 13th Street facade. Major exterior materials include marble, terracotta, brick, metal storefronts and doors, and sheet copper. The building has steel framing and non-structural brick exterior walls. Next. The ground floor has a lobby, community room, offices, and service spaces for the apartments, as well as two retail tenant spaces. The six upper floors have a main corridor on the building's long east-west axis, with smaller corridors in the three wings. The basement has service spaces. Primary interior materials include plaster and gypsum board walls and ceilings, composition flooring, and wood doors and windows. Despite alterations and loss of its ornate canopies, reducing integrity of design, materials, and workmanship, the property retains sufficient integrity to convey its significance. Next. Hotel Menlo is nominated at the local level of significance under Criterion C in the area of architecture for its representation of Beaux-Arts-influenced style, constructed with steel frames and materials and techniques coming into widespread use nationwide in the period between 1906 and 1915 in the blocks east of Oakland's Broadway corridor. The narrow wings on the 13th Street facade convey the original hotel use and its association with a substantial group of hotels, including the Grand Oakland Hotel one block to the east. Built in the vicinity in the years between the Great San Francisco Earthquake and Fire of 1906 and the 1915 Pan Pacific International Exposition. Next. The building's terracotta facing on the first two levels and intermediate cornices and string courses, prism glass storefront transoms, and pressed copper main cornice were materials commonly used to imbue buildings with Renaissance architectural devices and motifs while tailoring them to the environment in which city beautiful ideals were realized in American urban cores. The period of significance is 1914, the year the building was completed. Next. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner. The Landmark Preservation Advisory Board, in its role as representative of the City of Oakland, a certified local government, received a copy of the nomination. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Hotel Menlo is eligible under National Register Criterion C at the local level of significance with the 1914 period of significance. Next. Mission Cultural Center, later Mission Cultural Center for Latino Arts, is located in the Mission District, a large and diverse neighborhood in the east central portion of San Francisco. The building was constructed in 1947 as a furniture store and converted into the Mission Cultural Center in 1977. The building is a predominantly two- and three-story reinforced concrete building with a partial fourth floor. It is L-shaped in plan and has a flat roof with skylights. The primary facade faces Mission Street, while the larger rear west facade faces Osage Alley. The Mission Street facade features three structural bays. Next. The building's fenestration is concentrated at the center of the ground floor, crowned with a neon marquee reading Mission Cultural Center. This is flanked on either side by the primary entrances. The building is predominantly clad with concrete and stucco. The upper portion of the primary and east facades features a large and significant mural depicting Latino cultural themes. Significant interior and exterior alterations were made during a major renovation from 1984 to 1987, during which the MCC operated from temporary quarters several blocks away on Harrison Street. More modest modifications were made to the building in 1992 and 2015. The building is in good condition and retains all aspects of integrity. Next. Mission Cultural Center is nominated at the local level of significance under Criterion A in the areas of social history, art, performing arts, and ethnic heritage Hispanic for its association with the social and ethnic history of the Mission District as a predominantly Latino enclave, along with the development of Latino arts in San Francisco in association with California's Latino Cultural Center movement of the 1970s. The building meets the Latinos in 20th Century California Multiple Property Submission registration requirements for cultural centers in association with the historic context, Making a Life, Latinos in the Arts. Next. The 1977 to 1984 period of significance begins with the year the cultural center opened. The end date reflects two critical events in the cultural center's history. In 1984, the San Francisco Arts Commission transferred all programming responsibilities to the centers and moved staff from the civil service to nonprofit payroll. That same year, extensive interior renovations began, and the center was forced to relocate to temporary quarters. For its exceptional importance as the foremost art and cultural center for Latinos in San Francisco, Mission Cultural Center has the exceptional significance to satisfy Criteria Consideration G, properties that have achieved significance within the past 50 years. Next. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of San Francisco Heritage. The Historic Preservation Commission, in its role as representative of the City and County of San Francisco, a certified local government, submitted their review and comment in HPC Resolution Number 1143 in support of the nomination, with a recommendation additional information be included about the lobby murals and the building's character-defining features. Next. One additional letter of support has been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Mission Cultural Center is eligible under National Register Criterion A at the local level of significance with a 1977 to 1984 period of significance, meets the registration requirements of the Latinos in 20th Century California MPS, and satisfies Criteria Consideration G. Next. North Beach Historic District is located at the northernmost end of the city of San Clemente. North Beach refers to a roughly triangular area where El Camino Real, the city's primary east-west commercial corridor, curves northward and runs parallel with the coastline. The topography of the district is generally flat, with a noticeable slope from the northeast corner of the triangle towards the coastline. The street pattern is curvilinear to account for the contours of the landscape. Next. In addition to the previously listed San Clemente Beach Club, later known as Ole Hansen Beach Club, the district includes four contributing buildings: Aquarium Cafe, later OC Fresca, Casino San Clemente Theater, later Miramar Theater, and San Clemente Bowling Alley. The contributing buildings are all 1 and 2 stories in height and Spanish colonial revival in style. The four post-period of significance non-contributing resources are 3 commercial buildings along North El Camino Real and a pump station at the south corner of Avenida Estacion. Next. All of the contributing buildings have an east-west orientation, such that they are visible by people approaching from the coastline by rail or from inland by car, as was the case historically. Most of the resources include surface parking lots and landscaped open space with a common palette of plant material. The district is further united by wide colored concrete sidewalks, and the district as a whole retains all aspects of integrity. The contributing buildings are substantially unaltered, and the non-contributing buildings have the same commercial use and small scale as those that existed historically in the same locations. Next. North Beach Historic District is nominated at the local level of significance under Criterion A in the areas of community planning and development and entertainment recreation. Founded in 1925, San Clemente was one of the first new master planned towns in California. Located at the northern entrance to San Clemente on El Camino Real, by 1947, the resources comprising the district were referred to as the Amusement Center. Taken together, they reflect city founder Ole Hansen's intent to develop a beachside community that promoted social welfare, with unique public amenities such as generously sized open spaces and a variety of recreational facilities, aesthetically modeled on a romanticized version of California history. Next. In order to create the atmosphere he envisioned, the architecture of San Clemente was restricted to the Spanish colonial revival style. The period of significance extends from the year Ole Hansen published his plan for the community in 1927 to the completion of the last major building in North Beach in 1946. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner, the City of San Clemente. Next. The City's Planning Commission, which serves as the Cultural Heritage Commission, in its role as representative of the City of San Clemente, a certified local government, received a copy of the nomination. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine North Beach Historic District is eligible under National Register Criterion A at the local level of significance with a 1927 to 1946 period of significance. Pioneer Oil Refinery is an inactive refinery dating from the 19th century. Located in an industrial park on a flag-shaped lot set back several hundred feet down an access road off of Pine Street in Santa Clarita. The lot is enclosed by a chain-link fence. The northern part of the lot is generally flat, while the southern portion gradually slopes upward. Two buildings and nine structures are scattered across the otherwise undeveloped lot. Next. Eight of the 11 buildings and structures are located at the north end of the lot, and three are located at the top of a hill at the south end. There is no formal circulation between buildings and structures, just packed soil and gravel. An area at the northern end of the lot appears to have been paved at an unknown date, and the paving is inconsistent and deteriorating. Native shrubs and trees grow throughout the lot, particularly at the northern end. Next. The two buildings of the former refinery are wood-framed gabled sheds with corrugated metal walls and roofs, while the majority of the seven structures are massive riveted steel tanks that were used for the storage and treatment of petroleum. The refinery has stood vacant for decades, and the resources are in fair, deteriorating condition. The district retains all aspects of integrity. Next. Pioneer Oil Refinery is nominated at the state level of significance under criteria A and C. The district is significant under criterion A in the area of industry, for its direct association with the birth of the commercial petroleum industry in California, and under criterion C in the area of engineering, as a rare remaining example of an early oil refinery that exemplifies the distinguishing characteristics of the type and period, as well as the technological breakthroughs of the 1870s. Next. Due to its rarity and the nature of its restoration, based on all available information, the district satisfies criteria consideration E, reconstructed properties. The first period of significance, 1876 to 1888, encompasses construction through the end of distillery operations. The second period of significance, 1930, is the year the refinery was rehabilitated by the Standard Oil Company for interpretive, educational use. Next. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner, the City of Santa Clarita. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Pioneer Oil Refinery is eligible under National Register Criteria A and C at the state level of significance with an 1876 to 1888 period of significance and a 1930 period of significance and satisfies criteria consideration. Next. Nestled in the San Jacinto Mountains near Idlewild, the Futuro is a structural reinforced fiberglass polyester plastic portable home, meant to be easily moved to a desired site, usually by helicopter. Noted for its ellipsoid-shaped shell, which characterizes its space-age futuristic architectural style, the residence measures 26 feet 4 inches in diameter, 13 feet 2 inches high, with a total floor area of 520 square feet, and weighs approximately 11,900 pounds. Next. Following extensive exterior and interior restoration, the resource is in excellent condition, retaining its integrity of design, workmanship, materials, setting, feeling, and association to its 1969 period of significance. In recognition of owner Milford Wayne Donaldson's restoration effort and resulting preservation of this fragile resource, essential to saving the building, and raising the profile of the entire family of similar buildings, the property is identified as the Donaldson Futuro. Next. The Donaldson Futuro is nominated at the state level of significance under criterion A in the area of social history as an example of America's collective confidence as a leader in spaceflight, technology advancement, and economic prosperity, and in the area of conservation for the extensive restoration of a fragile and rare property type. The property is also significant at the state level of significance under criterion C in the area of architecture as the first serially produced plastic house in California and the US and the first all structural glass reinforced polyester house in California, which became a notable icon in California space age architecture. Next, it is the first Futuro to arrive in California, the only one in the state until 2015, and the only Futuro in California to have obtained a building permit for residential occupancy. The Donaldson Futuro satisfies criteria consideration B as a moved property, maintaining the essential historic features that convey its architectural significance, as well as its functionality as a vacation home that could be moved and deposited on any location. Its locale within the San Jacinto Mountains is reminiscent of the mountainous setting and general environment comparable to Finnish architect Matti Saarinen's original design intent. The period of significance is 1969, the year the Futuro was fabricated and shipped to California from Futuro Enterprises in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Next. The nomination is co-authored by the owner and a consultant. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Donaldson Futuro is eligible under National Register Criteria A and C at the state level of significance with a 1969 period of significance and satisfies criteria consideration B. Next. As the first Futuro to arrive in California and the only Futuro in California to have obtained a building permit for residential occupancy, the Donaldson Futuro is also nominated as a California Historical Landmark under Criterion 1 and under Criterion 3 as the first serially produced plastic house and the first all-structural glass-reinforced polyester house in California. Landmark designation also recognizes the extensive restoration of a fragile and rare property type essential to saving the building and raising the profile of the entire family of similar buildings nationwide, and probably internationally as well. Next. The period of significance is 1969, the year the Futuro was fabricated and shipped to California from Futuro Enterprises in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Donaldson Futuro remains eligible as a California historical landmark despite having been moved from its original location as a resource that maintains the essential historic features that convey its architectural significance, as well as its functionality as a vacation home. It could be moved and deposited on any location. Next. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine that for its association with California history and for its architectural significance, the Donaldson Futuro meets the criteria for designation as a California historical landmark. Consent calendar staff reports will continue with the Granite Grammar School California Register nomination presented by William Burke.
Granite Grammar School is a single-story elementary school with two-story towers constructed of hollow clay tile with exterior stucco, designed in the Spanish Colonial Revival style. The building is generally E-shaped with a central pavilion housing the main entrance and auditorium, flanked by two classroom wings with two-story towers and restrooms, and connected by passageways that form part of the building's primary facade. Windows are wooden multi-light sash with a mixture of arched windows and rectangular casement windows topped by large transoms. The building's principal entrance is an arched entryway with wooden double doors. The building was constructed in 1915, replacing an earlier one-room schoolhouse, and it was designed by master architects George Sellen and Alden W. Campbell. Two wooden outbuildings, a kindergarten classroom built behind the school in the 1920s, were demolished in 2017. Two metal maintenance buildings were constructed behind the school in the early 1980s, one of which was demolished in 2017. The property is eligible under Criterion 1 in the area of education as a significant example of early 20th century modern school design in Sacramento County, and Criterion 3 as a significant work of master architect George Sellen. Sellen, along with his associate Alden Campbell, was an advocate of new methods of school construction intended to address problems of safety, sanitation, heating, lighting, ventilation, and other matters of physical well-being in school architecture. One of these safety features, the use of hollow clay tile instead of wood in the building frame, was intended as a fireproofing measure, but this use resulted in the end of the building's role as a school in 1966, as hollow clay tile was discovered to be very vulnerable to earthquakes. The property's period of significance, 1915 to 1966, reflects the era from the building's construction until the end of its use as a school. The property is nominated by a development consultant on behalf of the property owner, the Folsom Cordova Unified School District, who have provided a letter of support for the nomination. Four other letters of support were also supplied by the applicant along with the nomination. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Granite Grammar School eligible for the California Register of Historical Resources at the local level of significance with a period of significance of 1915 to 1966. The last nomination on the consent calendar is for the Points of Historical Interest Program, Cambria Chinese Temple, which is a small, single-story wooden building located in Cambria, San Luis Obispo County. Approximately 14 feet 5 inches by 16 feet 5 inches, clad in board and batten vertical siding, with no windows other than two louvered roof vents. The roof is side-gabled and of low pitch. The primary facade has a false front and a hipped porch roof supported by thin rectangular wooden pillars above a double entry door. Initially constructed between 1892 and 1895, the building is vernacular with no particular architectural style. The temple was relocated approximately 100 feet northeast between 1895 and 1905, then moved 150 feet northwest circa 1925, where it was attached to a no longer extant building, the Warren Residence, and finally moved 400 feet south to its current location in 2007, then extensively rehabilitated between 2007 and 2011. The building interior is finished in blue-green, simple in design, with little ornamentation. The property is eligible as a point of historical interest as the only surviving property of its type in San Luis Obispo County. In addition, the property is also eligible for the California Register of Historical Resources under Criterion 1 for its association with San Luis Obispo County's Chinese community. Chinese pioneers to the Central Coast settled in isolated areas along the shoreline with an economy based on fishing and seaweed harvesting, in addition to quicksilver mining and general labor. In Cambria, a small concentration of buildings associated with the Chinese community was established by 1886, often referred to locally as the Chinese Center. This center became the preferred location for social interaction, community celebrations, business, and recreation within the Chinese community. The first references to the Joss House, a Euro-American term used to refer to a Chinese temple, appeared during this era. Despite its label, the temple building likely served multiple purposes. A sign fragment found within the building was translated as reading God of War, the primary deity of the Chi Kung Tong during the building's period of use, suggesting an association with that organization. The Chi Kung Tong was a fraternal organization that supported Chinese people in America by providing legal, monetary, and protective services. Due to anti-Chinese laws like the Chinese Exclusion Act, and the economic draw of larger cities that provided greater economic opportunity, the Chinese of community of Cambria saw diminished numbers in the early 20th century. In 1919, the property was purchased by Cambria resident William Warren, and in 1925, Warren relocated the building for use as part of his residence until its demolition in 2001. Thus, the property's period of significance is 1895 to 1925, from the earliest verifiable dates of the building's existence until just prior to its relocation and alteration as part of the Warren Residence. There are six known Chinese temples of this type extant in California, in Weaverville, Mendocino, Auburn, Marysville, Hanford, and Oroville. But Cambria Chinese Temple is the only surviving building of this type located in Central California. Rehabilitation of this temple was based on analysis performed in 2005 by Roberta Greenwood, who described it as the Red House. Rehabilitation of the building involved much replacement of exterior materials, but the restoration followed the Secretary of the Interior standards, retaining approximately 75% of the building's original materials, and replacement was done using in-kind materials, employing methods as similar to the original as possible, including locally sourced lumber. While the temple has thus lost some historic integrity, it retains sufficient integrity to convey its significance. Particularly in the area of location, per California PRC 5024.1D3, points of historical interest may be recommended for inclusion in the California Register if they are in accordance with its criteria. The property's California Register significance is based on its demonstrated association with Cambria's Chinese community under Criterion 1. However, Because the property has been moved multiple times, the property must be analyzed under Special Consideration 1 regarding moved buildings, which requires that a moved property can only be eligible if it was moved in order to prevent its demolition, and the new location must be compatible with the original character and use. The Cambria Chinese Temple satisfied this consideration, as its new site is on the original lot, closer to its original location, and in accordance with the principles of feng shui, faces east. The restoration removed later addition and replaced lost features in kind, retaining 75% of the original materials. The property thus retained sufficient historic integrity for listing in the California Register. The property is nominated by a consultant working on behalf of the property owner. No letters of support or objection have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Cambria Chinese Temple eligible as a California Point of Historical Interest as the first, last, or only of its type in San Luis Obispo County, and eligible for the California Register of Historical Resources under Criterion 1 with a period of significance of 1895 to 1925 and meeting the requirements of Special Consideration 1 regarding moved properties. This concludes the PowerPoint presentation of the consent calendar.
Thank you, Bill. I'd like to now ask if there is a motion on the floor.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Right. Commissioner Brandis makes the motion to approve the consent calendar. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
And may I have a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Commissioner Adams.
Aye.
Commissioner Brandis.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Hess.
Aye.
Commissioner Hoyos.
Aye.
Commissioner McKay is not present. Commissioner Villanueva.
Aye.
Commissioner Schreiro.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries 7-0-0.
Excellent. Thank you. Are there any commissioners who wish to speak on one or more of the properties that were on consent calendar today?
I had a couple questions.
Janet, please go ahead. Commissioner.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. I just had a couple of questions. First of all, great group of properties, and congratulations to the property owners and the preparers of the nominations. With regard to the Donaldson Futuro, since that's designed to be moved, I wonder if Amy could answer a question. I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon, but if a future property owner wanted to move it, would that negate the nomination? Is it associated and tied to the property specifically?
The new location would need to be something similar. It would need to be able to satisfy criteria consideration B the same way that this move from San Diego to Idlewild satisfied that criteria consideration. Because while it was intended to be movable, the idea was that you could put it someplace where one wanted it to be long term. And it wasn't meant to be something that you could just, you know, pick up and move on a monthly basis, for example. So my impression is that it's pretty permanent where it is right now, but if the Donaldsons were to sell it and a new owner wanted to relocate it, then in order to keep its eligibility, that new location would need to be compatible.
Okay, and then perhaps if the property owner is going to speak on the nomination, it would be interesting to know how they actually get up there. Looks like you kind of have to climb over some rocks to get to the main entrance. And I think that seems to be intentional. But I also had a question on the Cambria Chinese Temple. And I was wondering what the decision was to do that as a California Point of Historical Interest versus the National Register, perhaps under the multiple property nomination for Asian Americans.
The nomination is older and was done before the Asian American nomination.
Oh, I see. So this was actually a reevaluation of the property.
More than that. It was originally nominated as a California Historical Landmark, but we asked for revisions and recommended transitioning to point of historical interest with eligibility for the California Register. Okay. Because of its status as a moot property and a religious property, it's one of the special cases where a property might be eligible for the California Register, but not the National Register.
Got it. That makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Other commissioner comments? Commissioner Villanueva, who is on mute. Nope, you're good.
First of all, I'd like to echo the words of Armando Quintero, the director of California State Parks, who just sort of indicated, thought that this group of nominations was diverse. And I agree, not only diverse, I mean, you look at the Danielson Futuro and it's whimsical and it sort of pushes the boundaries. And I'd like to thank, Shippo Donaldson to continue that type of work. And as an archaeologist, I feel compelled to talk a little bit about the Santa Cruz Island Archaeological District and the amendment and the boundary increase. This is quite different when you deal with archaeological sites in that as you continue to work on archaeological sites, whether through research, whether through management, often you discover more sites. And through continued research, you find out that sites are older or more complex, so there are buried components as part of these sites. And so I commend the folks who put the Santa Cruz Island Archaeological District nomination together and amended that, just because it's important to do that periodically. Much of my research has been conducted on the Channel Islands, and really it's a very special place, not only for the indigenous peoples of the Southern Islands and the Northern Islands, Chumash and Gabrielina, respectively, but also for all of California to understand its long history, a history that started on the Channel Islands. At least some of the earliest evidence that we have could be 12 to 13,000 years old, and I think that's just fascinating. This type of work where we continue to amend, we continue to address threatened sites because of sea level rise, threatened sites because of other human-made activities, it becomes important to do this type of work. So I was really pleased to see that, as well as the diversity of properties on this, I mean, from a cemetery to buildings to a cultural center. That's what it's all about, California. And we have an incredible suite of historical and cultural resources out there. And we need to continue to do the wonderful work of this commission, as well as many others across the state. So that's all I really wanted to say.
Excellent. Other comments? Commissioner Adams.
I too, the diversity is absolutely awesome. The Futuro is purely California. I do have a question on the Pioneer Oil Finery, which I find absolutely unique as well, and love these kind of industrial properties. And I'm just wondering, there's mention in the application that it was an educational site, and I'm wondering, is it still open to the public?
My understanding is that there is a chain link fence around it, so it's not just automatically open. But we actually, both the consultants and I, were in communication with the Chevron Archives, and they are very supportive of the recognition of history. And I think if someone really wanted to visit the site, they could do so. And actually, the city owns it, and the consultants were able to get on site to take photographs. So there is some limited access, but it's not open in the same way that, say, like a city park would be. And that's probably more for safety reasons than anything else.
Thanks, Amy, for that.
Commissioner Hess.
I was really struck by this group. The nominations that come to us and make their way through the process and then are finally approved at these meetings is kind of random. There's no real selection process that we're going to have a certain number of this type of building or that type of building. So it's a kind of a random grouping from California history through the ages. But I was kind of struck by connections that we can make between many of these examples that happen to come before us today. For example, the Granite Grammar School from, 1914 or the teens, it Spanish style doesn't look modern, and yet it was in intent and function and materials and design right up to the date of concern about safety and light and ventilation and all of these new aspects of architecture. So in many ways, it's as modern as the Futuro from many decades later. So there's kind of a continuity there in California, really in many ways leading the nation in those sorts of considerations of modern architecture. I'd like to make a point also that the North Beach Historic District from 1925 in San Clemente is an early but one example of master plan communities in California, and especially in Orange County, where I live. We don't think of planning going back that far in California, but here are examples, and it's good for us to remark about them. And then finally, I just wanted to say I was also really surprised by the Pioneer Oil Refinery. Again, oil technology was, you know, the leading technology of the 1870s. And here is an example, and amazingly, it's still intact. But also, and I'm glad that the nomination pointed this out, in 1930, the owner, Standard Oil, decided to rehabilitate it and protect it in some way. I mean, that's preservation from 1930 by a major corporation of an important site. So the fact that they were thinking about that way back then, and not particularly they probably weren't using it as a refinery at that point, but they realized that it was important culturally, and they were part of that, and they wanted to preserve that in some way. So thanks very much.
All right, other comments? I'd like to say that I enjoyed the Oakland Auditorium and Mission Cultural Center nominations simply because I like those buildings that bring a community together. The ability to share art and performance is a hub for any community. And I have that where I live, and in normal conditions, when people gather safely, it's something that creates an event that people share and talk about. And for me, that's what a neighborhood is. That's what a community is. And to have historically significant structures who hosted those types of events be on this varied list of properties makes me think that hopefully we can get back to that and come together again in those types of buildings and enjoy those things that made our lives more enriched. So, and then of course having a spaceship on the nomination is also great. And I pictured Wayne directing traffic as they were moving this thing into place. And I'm sure he did a great job at that too. So again, varied list of properties, and this, it made the reading so much more entertaining for me. If there's no other comment, I'd like to ask if there is any public who now wishes to speak on behalf of one of the properties just approved on the consent calendar. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes. Deputy SHPO Janon Saunders has a list that she's maintained, I believe. And I will turn it over to her. And then after that, we can see if there are any other raised hands.
Thank you. Oh, hold on. Let me bring up my participants list again. If everyone could put your hands down for now. Thank you. I'm going to first ask, in order to manage this, can I ask for anyone who has signed up for the consent calendar but wants to only speak on the property that was taken off consent, the Buen Justo factory, if you could raise your hands, I'll take you off of my list for the consent calendar and hold off on calling you until we get to that item. Okay, Hold on just a second. Let me mark my list here. So I have Catherine, Robert Fruchtman, Amelie Crow, Stan Hayes. Okay, and 187. Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to lower your hands. Okay, great. I will be calling on you in the order in which you registered when you registered for this Zoom conference. So I'll just be going through for those of you who signed up as wanting to speak on the consent calendar. Once I work through everyone who pre-registered and said that they wanted to speak on the consent calendar, I'll then ask for anyone else who's an attendee to raise your hand and I'll call on you. So we will begin with... do we have Joe Gagliardi? I know you mentioned you may not be interested in speaking, but I'm going to go ahead and allow you to speak. You can unmute yourself and speak, and you'll have 3 minutes.
I'll waive that, right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Next on my list will be Milford Wayne Donaldson. Let me allow you to speak. All right, Mr. Donaldson, you can unmute yourself and speak.
Oh, thank you. I'm also sitting here with Lori as well. Director Quintero, if you're still listening, Chairman Ciro, Honorable Commissioners, Executive Secretary Polanco, and the Registration Unit of the Office of Historic Preservation, Jay Correa, William Berg, and Amy Crane. We are so excited, and thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for approving our nomination to forward it to the Keeper of the National Register as well as the California Historical Landmark. I wish to thank historian Eileen Magno of Heritage Architecture and Planning for her enthusiasm in editing and a very special thanks to historian Amy Crane for her professional support, her continued encouragement to pursue this unique nomination. It was really a long trip. And to address Commissioner Hansen's comment about how do you get up there? Well, you hit it right on the head there. You walk up a whole bunch of rock stones that I provided as stairways without really affecting the site. The site is pretty much like we found it. It's high up in Pine Cove, about 5 miles north of Idlewild. At 6,500 feet elevation, we get really great snow and everything else. And that's really what the original architect wanted to do with his ski cabin for an old high school friend. So it was a heavy move. It was one of these kind of projects that Alan Hess knows very well, that where you start off, you really don't know what you're getting into. But they wanted to demolish it in San Diego. They dropped a big ball on it. It broke a couple windows out and cracked the skin. But through my old friend, Albert Spidell, who we were teaching a plastics class at the Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in 1972, if you can imagine, we continued on to restore it. So again, I'd just like to thank everybody for this. It was a wonderful nomination to work on, a rather unique one for that. It reminds me of our nomination that we had at the Office of Historic Preservation several years ago to nominate the 106 objects left on the moon at Tranquility for Apollo 11. So we find that was pretty unique at the time. So continue on, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Janon.
Thanks, Wayne. All right, next on my list will be, Charlene Gross. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself, and you will have 3 minutes once you begin speaking. Are you there, Ms. Gross?
That sound okay?
Yeah, you sounded maybe a wee bit nervous.
I'm going to call one more time, Ms. Gross. I'll ask you to unmute yourself. Oh, maybe sometimes people are at phone. I see I have a hand raised, someone who's calling in from phone number 872. I'm going to allow you to speak, and then I'll just come back to Ms. Gross one more time. Okay, you will need to unmute yourself Person calling from phone number ends in 872. Maybe you did not realize you raised your hand. Okay, I'm going to lower your hand. Okay. And Ms. Gross, I'm going to assume that you do not want to speak. If it turns out I'm wrong, you can raise your hand when I come back around. I'm going to disable you. Okay, next on my list is Samuel Deutsch. Let me see if you're here. Okay, I do not have you registered. Ramon Iglesias. No Ramon Iglesias. Let's see. Sorry, I'm going through my list, but none of these. Okay, David Dial. Mr. Dial, I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself, and you will have 3 minutes.
I will wait my time.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Kieran Buckley, I believe that you will want to speak on the factory that's been moved to discussion. I'm going to allow you to talk just to verify that. You can unmute yourself and just let us know, did you want to speak to the consent calendar or did you want me to hold you over until the discussion item? You do need to unmute yourself.
Oh. Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me clear?
Yes. I wanted to verify, did you want to make a comment on the consent calendar or did you want me to call on you when we get to the public comments for the Buon Giusto Sausage Factory?
I'll wait for the public comments.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I will hold you until then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me mark my list here. All right, let's see. Lucy Gill, I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you will have 3 minutes.
Can everyone hear me?
You're a little bit quiet.
Okay, I will try and speak louder.
That's great.
All right, thanks. Honorable Commissioners, my name is Lucy Gill. As a professional archaeologist and PhD candidate at the University of California, Berkeley, I support the nomination of the Chinese Shrimp Camp at Point Mulati to the National Register of Historic Places. As stated in the nomination form, this site meets two criteria for eligibility, specifically the intact nature of its jetties and midden features protected by the modern fill that covers the site can yield significant historic information. Part of the significance of the Point Mulati Shrimp Camp is its comparability with other Chinese shrimp camps in the San Francisco Bay, most notably China Camp in Marin County, which was nominated to the NRHP in 1979. Unlike today's nomination, China Camp in Marin was nominated as part of a historic district that also included an indigenous shell mound, a traditional cultural property with importance to Coast Miwok people. This district was determined to have state-level significance in archaeology, architecture, commerce, settlement, and social history. In my professional opinion, the same rationale could be applied to Point Mulati, which should be considered as a historic district that includes not just the Chinese shrimp camp, but also for indigenous shell mounds that have contemporary significance to Ohlone groups, including the Confederated Villages of Lashan. Like the shell mound in China Camp State Park, the shell mounds at Point Mulati, which are sites CACCO 282, 283, 284, and 423, are eligible for the NRHP as traditional cultural properties. All four of these sites have an integral relationship to traditional cultural practices or beliefs, which are tied to specific places that have been memorialized through shell mound building and ancestor burial for millennia. The condition of these sites is such that the relevant relationships survive, and the contemporary members of the Confederated Villages of Lashan continue to practice cultural traditions there and maintain profound connections to this place. Like the Chinese shrimp camp at Point Mulati, these shell mound sites also meet multiple criteria for eligibility to the National Register of Historic Places. Following criterion A, they demonstrate the ongoing participation of Ohlone people in the history of the Bay, as evidenced through archaeological, historic, and ethnographic information. They also meet criterion C, as they are representative of the long tradition of shell mound construction within the San Francisco Bay. Unfortunately, very few of these shell mounds have survived the impact of urban growth. Therefore, these sites at Point Mulati are unique, as like the Chinese shrimp camp, they have been preserved beneath contemporary fill. Importantly, not just the shell mounds, but the entire landscape at Point Mulati is integral to traditional cultural practices. Lastly, they also fulfill criterion D, as these sites have and continue to yield significant archaeological information. Nominating the Chinese Shrimp Camp is an important first step towards recognizing the significance of Point Mulati, and I hope you will keep the significance of these other sites in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gill. You know, if you're interested in preparing a nomination for those other sites, please feel free to follow up with our office. Our wonderful registration unit staff would be happy to work with you on that. Thank you. Next, I will be calling on Teal Kopic, I believe is the last name. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you will have 3 minutes once you begin speaking.
Hi, my name is Teal and I work with the Nature Conservancy on Santa Cruz Island. I just wanted to thank everyone that was putting a lot of work into updating our nomination. It really means a lot because we have a really special island where all of these really significant cultural sites are very intact, and it's awesome to see a lot of really cool people interested in the island. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I will be calling on, let's see, Eileen Magno. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, State Historic Director Quintero, Chairperson Shiro, State Historic Preservation Officer Polanco, the State Historical Resources Commissioners, and the Office of Historic Preservation staff. My name is Eileen Magno from Heritage Architecture and Planning in San Diego, and I would like to take this time to thank you for your consideration of the Donaldson Futuro as both a National Register for Historic Places resource and a California Historical Landmark. Your consent and action today not only celebrates the significant, fragile, and rare resource, but honors the long career, nearly 50 years, his personal work, and the passion of preservation architect and former SHPO Milford Wayne Donaldson. And for this, we are truly, truly grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Magno. Next, let's see. I'm looking over here at my list. I do not see. Barbara Zerwinski, I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you'll have 3 minutes. And I know you had selected a number of items when you registered, so perhaps you actually were just attending. I will ask you to unmute once more just to make sure it's not a technical issue. Okay, I'm going to move on, and you can raise your hand if you did want to speak when I come back around and ask for raised hands. Next on the list will be Kate Eggert. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you'll have 3 minutes.
Yeah, hi, this is Kate Eggert with GEHPC. I just wanted to thank you for the commission for putting the King Edward on the consent calendar, and thank you as always to staff. And we hope you enjoy the nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eggert. All right, let's see if I have. I have a Mickey or Mikey Jackson. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you'll have 3 minutes. Again, Mikey Jackson or Mickey Jackson, I'll ask you to unmute. Okay, one more time. Okay, I'll move on and you can raise your hand. Oh, wait, are you there? Yes, go ahead, you have 3 minutes. Oh, I see you unmuted yourself, but we can't hear you. Oh, and she dropped off. Okay, well, I will move on. Let's see if we have Rachel Purcell. No. And Gabriel Perez. All right, Gabriel Perez, I just saw you there. Okay, Mr. Perez, I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself, and you have 3 minutes.
Hello. Hello. Good morning, Commission. I do not have any comments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, now I've worked through everyone who is pre-registered as wanting to speak on the consent calendar. Is there anyone else among the attendees who would like to speak on the consent calendar? Please raise your hand. And if you're on the phone, you do that by pressing *9. I have Catherine Molinar. Yes, I will allow you to talk, Ms. Molnar. You need to unmute yourself and you have 3 minutes.
Oh, hello. I don't have a lot of comments. I just wanted to say thank you. I'm the consultant who prepared the Benicia City Cemetery nomination along with the Benicia City Cemetery History Committee. Just thank you, commissioners, for taking the time to read it and to look through all the material we presented. And especially, I just wanted to thank Mr. Burke for all of his advice and direction, patience, and just this really well-spoken presentation today. I really appreciate that. We had a lot of fun working on this nomination. The people who are buried in the cemetery are just fascinating. It was just really fun to learn about these people that nobody has considered in a long time. These early citizens, these early pioneers, had these really colorful lives and just a lot of interesting stories. So I appreciate the opportunity to get to work on it. And thank you guys again for looking at it and considering it. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Molnar. All right, is there any other attendee who would like to, member of the public who would like to speak on the consent calendar? All right, thank you very much, Chairman Serrero. There are no other commenters who wish to speak on this item.
Thank you so much. Great, before we move on to our next agenda item, I'd like to ask if our executive secretary has any comments.
I do, thank you so much. I just wanted to congratulate our SHPO Emeritus Wayne Donaldson and his lovely wife, Lori, and everybody involved on the nomination for the Futuro House. What an amazing property. It always makes us so happy and excited to see that resource, but just know that it is also backed by years of dedication to our preservation field and to the work that we all do every day. And so I just wanted to take that special acknowledgement and thank Wayne and Lori for submitting the nomination so that we could all continue to enjoy it in the California National Registers. And then I just also wanted to echo everybody's comments. We strive in our office to really work with our communities and the public to ensure that the sites that they feel are important are on the National Register and that places look like our communities and people see themselves, their ancestors, with pride in the things that we're celebrating and commemorating every day. And I just think that this collection of nominations, and particularly excited about the use of two multiple property documents that we've prepared in conjunction with the National Park Service, is just really a great step forward. And I'm just so proud of our communities for this work.
Thank you, Shibo Polanco. Those are great comments. We are now going to move to our newly identified agenda item, which is the discussion item. The commission will first hear the Office of Historic Preservation presentation and staff report regarding that specific nomination. And then we'll hear testimony from those who wish to speak on that item. And I'll explain after we hear the staff report how that testimony will work and the timeframes attached to each. But before we proceed, even though we asked this question before and this property was a part of that initial list, I'm going to ask it again just for clarity. Are there any commissioners that wish to recuse themselves from hearing the discussion item? And are there any commissioners that wish to disclose discussions with any parties regarding the discussion item? Doesn't sound like it. So now we're going to hear the staff report and presentation, and then we'll get to testimony after that.
The Buon Gusto Sausage Factory. The Buon Gusto Sausage Factory occupies a central location in the North Beach neighborhood of San Francisco, a neighborhood of mixed residential and commercial buildings, most dating to post-1906 reconstruction. The building is located mid-block on the south side of Green Street between Grant and Columbus Avenues. Next. Buon Gusto operated as a meat production facility from 1948 until 1978 and remains an intact representative example of the international modern style architecture. At the principal street-facing elevation, the building reads as two stories with a single-story rear extension that reaches the far property line. Next. The principal elevation is deftly composed around the central monumental window wall. Fine details express modern architecture, including simple reveals and recesses, ribbed tiles, textured glazed panels, the repetition of rectangular proportions, and a pair of narrow metal pipes that support the soffit above the window. The narrow concrete lintel over the central window is adorned with diagonal red, green, and white striping, the national colors of Italy. Next. Original signage across the top of the facade spell out Buon Gusto in bold red sans serif uppercase letters. A circular clock with neon script spelling out Buon Gusto sausage hangs on the east side of the facade and provides contrast. Next. The Buon Gusto Sausage Factory building is nominated to the National Register under Criterion A at the local level of significance in the area of commerce and industry. As a facility that produced Italian specialty foods in San Francisco's North Beach neighborhood, Buon Gusto is directly associated with the commercial development of the area, as well as the history of its Italian community during the early to mid 20th century. Next. Buon Gusto was important in maintaining an Italian culinary presence in the neighborhood during a period of significant demographic change after World War II. As the last vestige of the area's sausage-making trade, the building remains a tangible link to the community's Italian heritage of the 20th century. Next. The building is also nominated under Criterion C in the area of architecture because it embodies the distinctive characteristics of the international style and as the work of master architect Martin J. Rist. Rist designed many notable buildings during a 50-year career. Buon Gusto illustrates his ability to adeptly design a small commercial building in the international style. The building's overall period of significance begins in 1948 with the date of construction and ends in 1978 when sausage production ceased. Next. The property is nominated by Telegraph Hill Dwellers. The San Francisco Historic Preservation Commission, in its role as a certified local government, recommends that the Buon Gusto Sausage Factory be nominated to the National Register. OHP has received 4 letters of support for the nomination. Staff supports the nomination and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Buon Gusto Sausage Factory eligible under criteria A and C at the local level of significance with a 1948 to 1978 period of significance. Next, staff further recommends that the Buon Gusto Sausage Factory meets criteria consideration G, properties that have achieved significance within the last 50 years, for the portion of its period of significance that spans 1970 to 1978. As the last Italian sausage factory to operate in the North Beach neighborhood of San Francisco, Buon Gusto was enough of an anomaly that in 1975, the San Francisco Chronicle wrote an article that featured Buon Gusto as the sausage factory that chose to stand its ground. As the sole survivor of the once numerous Italian specialty meat producers in North Beach, Buon Gusto continued to play an exceptionally important role within the context of specialty meat manufacturing in and the Italian history and identity of North Beach. This concludes the staff report.
Thank you, Jay. So I'm going to describe now how the discussion process works. We're going to hear public comment first. That'll begin with the nominee as well as the landowner, and I'll identify their timeframes. And then once we get through all of that and through anybody else who's registered to talk on behalf, we'll get to commissioner discussion and then a vote. So The commission will first hear from the nominator or his, her, or their designee. They'll have 10 minutes to speak on behalf of the property. The commission will then hear from the property owners or his or her, or their designee, and they will have 10 minutes to speak. Individuals representing local, state, federal, and tribal governments will each have 5 minutes to speak, and any member of the general public will have 3 minutes to speak. As stated at the beginning of the meeting, we'll be calling on speakers in order identified in the meeting notice, and within each category of speaker in the order in which you registered for the meeting, unless you communicated with us prior to this meeting about speaking in a particular order. After we go through those attendees who've registered for this agenda item, we'll ask for anyone else who wants to speak on that agenda item to raise your hand, and we'll go through the same process we did for the consent calendar. Before I hand it over to Janan, I want to ask Tara, did I say all of that right? Did I miss any points?
No, you're right on.
Great. Excellent. Okay, Janan, please, with our registered speakers, first with the nominee.
Actually, I have one person who raised his hand, so I'm going to allow you to talk, Miss. Oh, he put his hand down, so we're okay. Okay. And I apologize because we didn't have this as a discussion item. I'm taking a guess as to the nominator and the property owner based upon registrations, but if I'm wrong and I should call on somebody else as the nominator, please let me know. So Catherine Petrin. Oh, actually, I see you've dropped off. Okay. Let's see. I believe that the Telegraph Hill Dwellers is the boards behind the preparation of the nomination. Mr. Hayes, I'm going to allow you to talk. Could you please verify if you are the nominator? Unmute yourself. Verify if you're the nominator, and then you'll have 10 minutes.
Yes, I am the nominator. Can you hear me?
Yes, and you have 10 minutes. Go ahead.
Right, and I'd like to share my time, assuming that Catherine Petrin gets back on the line. So
she is back, actually, and she just raised her hand. So okay. Do you want to go ahead and start, and then I'll go over.
Let me take a couple of minutes at the outset of this, and then I'll pass it to her.
Okay.
So, good morning. It's nice to see all of you. I'm Stan Hayes. I'm the president of the Telegraph Hill Dwellers. Founded in 1954, THD is one of the oldest, largest, and most widely respected neighborhood organizations in San Francisco. On behalf of THD, I'm here today to express our strong support for the Buen Gusto National Register nomination. San Francisco columnist Carl Nolte once wrote that of all San Francisco's special places, North Beach remains at the heart of the city. We couldn't agree more. North Beach is the heart of San Francisco, a heart that beats with historic places as its lifeblood. This is a building that is well documented by architectural historian Catherine Petrin is tightly bound to the industrial and commercial development of North Beach and the history of the Italian community here. This is a building that is locally significant under multiple National Register criteria. With a grant provided by San Francisco Heritage, THD initiated this effort to prepare and submit this nomination to ensure the preservation and protection of this historic building. The property owner is seeking to develop a 74-foot, 34-unit mixed-use project on this site under the state density bonus law. We don't oppose development of this site as housing, so long as that housing is affordable and the building is designed in scale with and respects the history and character of its historic setting. The Buen Gusto building is an important historic resource in North Beach. We simply want to make sure it's recognized and protected for its historic significance. But this nomination stands on its own merits. We enthusiastically agree with the state office's conclusion that, quote, the nomination makes a great case for listing the Buen Gusto Sausage Factory in the National Register. We appreciate and strongly agree with the letters of support for this nomination submitted to you, including from San Francisco Heritage, the Northeast San Francisco Conservancy, and the unanimous 6-0 vote recommending this nomination by San Francisco's Historic Preservation Commission. Please join them in their support. Please approve this nomination. Thank you. At this point, I'd like to hand this off to Catherine. Catherine, if you're on the line.
Thank you. Travis, will you pause the timer? Thank you. All right. I will mute you, Mr. Hayes, and Ms. Petrin. All right, I'm allowing you to speak. You need to unmute yourself, and you have a little over 7 minutes.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Good morning, Honorable Commissioners, Ms. Polanco, and SHPO staff. As noted, I'm Catherine Petrin, preparer of the nomination, the Bongusta Sausage Family Factory nomination. As you've seen in Jay's presentation, the Bongusta Sausage Factory is eligible for the National Register under Criteria A and C, Criteria C. I won't reiterate its significance, but I do want to provide a few reasons as to why it is such a rare resource in San Francisco and why it deserves recognition. It was built in 1948 as a purpose-built industrial structure, a factory that produced Italian specialty meats in North Beach, a teeming and still dense mixed residential commercial neighborhood. It might seem odd nowadays to think about living next door to a sausage factory, but neighbors talked about the wonderful aromas that wafted from the building until the 1970s. It's very much integrated into the neighborhood. It retains an aura. People talk about it. People ask about it. As Jay noted, it's the last vestige of the area's sausage making trade and still a tangible link to the Italian heritage of the area. Together with its clean lines, superb architectural detail, and high level of integrity, Bongusta remains a distinctive visual landmark in North Beach, an excellent intact example of international style applied to a utilitarian building type. And it's just really kind of a neighborhood and city treasure. But I don't want this commission to have the impression that this nomination is controversial or that the findings are surprising. They're not. Just for context, the building was recognized as a contributor to the Upper Grant Avenue Historical District, a California Register eligible district. And that work dates back to 1982. In 2019, the owner was required by the City of San Francisco Planning Department to submit a historical resource evaluation and to evaluate the building's eligibility. The owner's consultant, LSA, concurred with that previous finding of eligibility from 1982 as a contributing element to a district. And also the consultant, the owner's consultant, found that the building appears individually eligible for the California Register. Apart from that, the City of San Francisco considers the building an A-rated historic resource and agrees that it qualifies as a historical resource for purposes of CEQA. At the City's Historic Preservation Commission hearing on October 7th, the owner also mentioned that he considers it a handsome building. So it's really all around appreciated. So I just wanted to say this National Register nomination simply yet formally makes the case for its significance and recognition. The building merits National Register listing, and we ask that this commission will agree and approve the nomination. I thank you for your consideration, and I also want to thank Jay Correa for his assistance and during the preparation of the nomination, his technical assistance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Petrin. All right, next I'm going to move to the property owner, Karen Buckley. Mr. Buckley, I'm allowing you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you have 10 minutes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I am the owner of the building 535 Green Street in San Francisco. I appreciate and value the building, and I intend to keep it and repurpose the interior space. I also want to use the undeveloped eastern part of the lot, currently a parking lot, to provide more housing, affordable and market rate, using the state density bonus program. I cannot weigh in on the merits of this nomination and want to go on record that the authors of this nomination, who I've been previously in contact with, meetings and by email, did not do me the courtesy of alerting me to this nomination or asking my opinion. Before the San Francisco hearing, I just learned about that hearing by pure coincidence the day before the hearing came about. I have an active application under review by the planning department at this time. This is to secure support for this state density bonus mixed use addition alteration project, sensitive to the potential historic resource and consistent with the Secretary of Interior standards. This nomination coming at this time has all the hallmarks of a political play to stop this development. In finishing that, I want to say I have something in common with the, after reading the report, I have something in common with the original owner. He came to town into San Francisco, Pinellas, and he's an immigrant, the same as myself. I came to town, San Francisco, Pinellas, and I'm an immigrant. I'd like to live the remainder of my time on, pass it on to maybe Amelia Payne, if that's possible, Amelia Payne Crow. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Oh, and I see the timer's been stopped. All right, Mr. Buckley, I will mute you. And per your request, I am allowing Amelia Crow to speak on your behalf. I'm allowing you to talk, Ms. Crow. All right, you can unmute yourself and you have 7.5 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Amelie Fane Crow, and I am a member of the architectural team that is currently has the application in for multifamily housing at this site. And I'm commenting to provide context and information regarding this building, since, as the owner mentioned, the nomination was not made with his consent or his knowledge. This site, including the vacant parking lot, which is included in the historic nomination, was submitted for planning review over 2 years ago with a proposal to build multifamily housing. 94% of those units are 2 and 3 bedrooms intended for families to live in the neighborhood. A presentation to a neighborhood group over a year ago, almost exactly in October, received good feedback and overwhelming support. I also just want to make a side note that the nominator's statement of the proposed building height was not correct, and the proposal is publicly available on the San Francisco Planning website. Most importantly, we enjoy the existing building, and the proposed multifamily housing design has approached integration of the 535 Green Street building very conservatively. It proposes to preserve and restore the existing building as experienced by the public, including all of its exterior facade walls. The existing building has been vacant for decades, except for some pigeons and some rust, and it has been falling into disrepair without a purpose. Our project proposes to renew, repair, and restore the building for the neighborhood to enjoy. Given these conditions, we have serious concerns that this nomination, submitted years into our permit review process, is being used strategically to make it easier to prevent housing on the site. It's important to note that the pending housing project does use the state density bonus law. One of the few ways that the project's entitlement can be denied is if a local approval agency finds it causes an unmitigable impact to a property listed on the California Register specifically. While we are working very hard with trained preservation experts in San Francisco's planning department to ensure the design is consistent with the Secretary of Interior standards, this nomination would open up those experts' conclusions for second guessing. So I can appreciate that your process typically focuses very narrowly on eligibility. However, I would like to read a comment by one of the SF Historic Preservation Commissioners during their recent discussion of the building. She said, "The property owner himself has spoken up. It just seems to be a bit challenging not to hear all sides and to make sure we are putting some conscientious effort into it.
why would we look at a one-sided issue and not the whole package? In the spirit of her comment, when you make these decisions, we ask that you consider the practical effect of the nomination on new housing, which we so desperately need, as well as on the practical path to restoration and repair for the nominated building. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crow. Chairman Sparrow, remind me, we have 5-minute rebuttals. Is that?
I believe it's a 5-minute rebuttal, okay. But we also have 5 minutes for local government and tribal comments.
Oh, yeah, I have no local government, state government, or tribal comments. So I will come back to, I'll come back to you, Mr. Hayes, for 5 minutes. And if you want to turn any of your time over to Ms. Petrin when you're done, just let me know. I'm allowing you to speak now. Go ahead and unmute yourself, and you have 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not going to take that much time. I just want to clear up something that I think Mr. Buckley has said, both here and previously. We're very sorry that Mr. Buckley feels as though he's not been notified. At the time we submitted and prepared the application, we provided his contact information to OHP as part of our application. OHP accepted our application as complete and actually used it in exactly the way it was intended. OHP staff sent him 2 letters, one in July and the other in September, copies of which we have, both well before today's meeting. We verified again this week that the contact information we supplied to OHP for Mr. Buckley is still valid. And again, we're sorry that he feels that he hasn't been contacted on of this, but I think this process has moved forward the way it should. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Buckley, I'm going to allow you to speak in rebuttal. You have 5 minutes.
Yes, this is Kieran Buckley. In response to Mr. Hayes, yes, I did get the letters from the state, and I was aware of this hearing, the state hearing, but I was not aware or notified in any way about the either from you or the city of San Francisco about the when it went in front of the city of San Francisco. Thank you. Again, thank you all for your time.
Janon, you're on mute.
Thank you, Adam. I see Ms. Petrin raised her hand. There were a few minutes left, Ms. Petrin, on Mr. Hayes' time for rebuttal, so I'm going to allow you to speak. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. I just really wanted to reiterate bring this back to the focus of this item, this hearing, this meeting, and reiterate that the nomination makes the case for the Bon Gusto Sausage Factory as being eligible for the National Register. So I just wanted to reiterate that's the focus. I very much hesitate to weigh in on the project, since that's not the focus of this hearing, but perhaps as a neighbor to the site and on behalf of the community, I would say that the community would very much welcome a project that meets the Secretary of the Interior's standards in spirit and to the letter of those standards. It would be wonderful to see the building rehabbed, reused, repurposed, enjoyed again, and to see it once again as a vibrant part of the neighborhood. It is vibrant, but it has been, the building itself has not been used in a significant way since 1992. So I just wanted to reiterate those points. This is not an attempt to stop a project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Petrick. Okay, I have two public members who are interested, so I'm going to call on you in the order in which you registered. So Robert Fruchtman, I'm allowing you to talk. You need to unmute yourself, and you will have 3 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I agree with the project sponsor that this is largely an attempt to stop the development of a housing project. The Telegraph Hill dwellers are not just respected, but also very well connected to one of San Francisco's most powerful supervisors and politicians. The project was proposed 2 years ago. I don't think it's a coincidence that this project is being, or this nomination comes now. I would also like to note that the application includes the entire property, not just the factory. So that includes the parking lot, which is on the site. The parking lot is certainly not historic. I haven't heard anyone reference the parking lot as a historic eligible resource. And I think that if you are to designate the site as historic, you should only include the factory and not any of the surrounding lot area, since it has no bearing on the historicity of the application. But again, the whole purpose of this nomination is really typical of San Francisco's housing politics, where we've seen something similar happen at 3333 California Street in San Francisco, where an old office building for, I can't remember, the Firefighters Fund, I think, was proposed for development. And then that building received a nomination for a historic property. This is typical. I don't think there's any reason to give this project any more and any more reasons to stop building it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frickman. I see two hands raised. I'm going to go ahead and keep your hands raised. I'll come to you after I call the last person who had pre-registered for this item. Sarah, let me mute you. So Sarah Ogilvy, I don't see you there. Oh, wait, you're at the 187. Okay, yes. I'm allowing you to talk, Ms. Ogilvy. You need to unmute yourself. And since you're on the phone, you do that by pressing *6. And you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you so much. Greetings, Honorable Commissioners. Yes, my name is Sarah Ogilvy. I do live in San Francisco. I'm opposing this application to historic landmark designation because the application attempts to include the interior parking lot in the designation. Commissioners, the existing property is already a Class 1 historic eligible resource in San Francisco. It has been subject to this and will continue to be subject to the Secretary of Interior standards and review by preservation planners. Approving the nomination does not protect the existing building beyond its current status. The registration here only seems to have the chilling effect of antagonizing the proposed housing development with harmful delays. It will not increase the requirements for preservation or support the current proposal's efforts to repair and renew the building. Using the state density bonus law, these are provisions of the law that are essential to the solutions that are employed to carefully defer to the existing building. The nomination could potentially be used as opening outside groups to challenge San Francisco City Planner's review, already held to a very high level of historic scrutiny and low impact to the existing structure. The group that filed the nomination was invited to public neighborhood pre-application meeting in 2019, but did not attend. Instead of discussing with other neighbors or engaging with the owner, they filed the nomination. I do not believe Californians benefit from the designation of a parking lot as historic. Californians benefit from the production of housing that is in historic shortage, which is precisely what the owner of the property intends to do with this application for housing development. I apologize, commissioners. This is clearly presented as a tactic carried out on behalf of the applicants to obstruct the construction of 34 homes on the site located in the densest district of San Francisco. Commissioners, the San Francisco has a forthcoming housing element mandating 72,000 new housing units for the city in the next decade. We simply need to maximize the amount of housing that can be constructed here, and affordability will come with the construction of thousands of other units. Let's allow 34 families the chance to make history in San Francisco in an already historically designated location that will be respected. I urge the body to turn down this application, permit the proposed housing project to move forward seamlessly, and I thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Ogilvie. All right, I'm going to move on to the folks who have raised their hands. I believe I accidentally lowered, there we go. I'll start with Ramon Iglesias. I'm allowing you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, yes, I'm Ramon Iglesias and I live a mere 3 blocks from Buen Gusto. And I strongly oppose this nomination. Why? What does the nomination achieve? Since this building is already protected by law and by the new building design, the only thing that this nomination achieves is to sabotage the construction of new housing in the interest of preserving a parking lot. It is irresponsible in a city with housing shortage to prefer a slab of asphalt than homes for families. Mr. Hayes is right that North Beach is the heart of San Francisco. But Mr. Hayes, a frozen heart is not a beating heart. The new residents will inject dynamism to the neighborhood, creating the basis for new buen gustos and new architectural treasures. People, more than buildings, are the lifeblood of the city, and we need them here. I oppose this nomination. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Iglesias. All right, and then finally we have Samuel Deutsch. I'm allowing you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you will have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Sam Deutsch and I wanna thank the commission here today. I am a renter, I live in San Francisco and I'm calling because honestly, it's not even about the historic nature. I just worry that if you look at the context of this application, I think that California's historic landmarking process is being abused and being used in bad faith. And I think it would set a bad precedent. And the reason for that is that this application was not filed until a new housing project was proposed on the site. And the people who filed that application are the Telegraph Hill dwellers. And it would be nice to believe that they are purely altruistic and just want to preserve the building. But the funny thing is that the new housing project preserves the heart of Buen Gusto and incorporates it into the design of the building. However, the Telegraph Hill dwellers are also trying to preserve the parking lot, which could potentially risk this building from receiving a state density bonus. And to further illustrate how I believe the Telegraph Hill dwellers are doing this in bad faith, the fact that in their presentation, they said they're fine with the building being built as long as it's affordable housing. If you actually look at what they've done in the past, for example, at 88 Broadway a few years ago, the Telegraph Hill dwellers seek to build less affordable housing on that site because they were opposed to housing in general. And here, what I believe they're doing is that they're manipulating this process in bad faith to stop housing from being built. And what I'm worried about is if you look at the elections that just happened, many pro-housing legislators were elected. And I fear that if we let bad faith actors like the Telegraph Hill dwellers abuse this process to stop homes from being built, the state government will wisen up to this and make it harder to landmark things in the future. So I think not only for the good of this project, but for the good use of the California State Historical Registry, it really doesn't make sense to let this go forward and let this entire process be manipulated by actors such as the Telegraph Hill dwellers that if you look at their history and their connection to anti-housing politicians in San Francisco, it's clear what their motive is. It's to stop housing and they're just manipulating this process. And it's especially ridiculous because the new housing preserves the historic nature of the building. And as a result, it's clear that their application is without merit and should be rejected for the good of San Francisco, the residents of San Francisco, and the long-term future of historical preservation in general. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deutsch. Do I have anyone else who hasn't already spoken on this issue who would like to speak on this agenda item? Please raise your hand. Seeing no hands, Chairman Swiro, this ends the public comments on this item.
Thank you very much. We now open up to commissioner comments. And I have some comments, but I'll hold back and see what other commissioners might want to ask or say as we get this other part of the discussion moving. So are there any commissioners that wish to begin the conversation?
Chairman Ciro, if I could ask, start with a question to staff that reviewed the application. Am I correct in assuming that the parking lot was historically part of the Buen Gusto building? We don't have a boundary issue here, right? We're nominating the entire site. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Both points are correct, yes.
All right. So if I could continue, I just have brief comments.
Go ahead.
I believe the nomination, I'll go through all the other issues, but to start, I believe the nomination is well written. It covers criteria A and C adequately, establishing the importance of the building and the historic and the architectural merit of the building as it exists now. We are, of course, prevented from taking into account in our deliberations anything regarding economic development. We're not blind to what's going on, of course. This is a very highly charged real estate market, but that's not what we're being asked to do. We're being asked to just give an opinion on the narrow issue of historical significance. Now, stepping back from it, from a purely wearing my architect hat for a minute, additions to historic buildings are allowed. And this will be a classic case of a building adaptation and then an addition. An addition following the standards can easily accommodate in a given lot with enough surface area, can easily accommodate multifamily housing. So I don't think we have too much of a disagreement here because, again, building adaptation and additions to historical buildings are allowed. That's not the issue. I suspect that we as a commission cannot prevent the two sides that have given testimony here from having an adversarial relationship. I mean, that's just the way things are shaping up, and that inevitably they'll continue to have this adversarial relationship until the building is completed. But that's not our purview. Our only purview is to look at the nomination, determine if it's viable, I believe it is, and to vote on the merits. And I'm interested to hear other opinions by other commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioner Hoyos. Yes, Commissioner Villanueva.
So I'm reminded every day that the work I do as an archaeologist, the work I do as a historic preservationist, the work I do as a historian, not only impacts my understanding of the past, but it impacts people today. And I teach my students this. I tell them, you know, what we do in trying to preserve and advocate for history, for archaeology, for our built environment, that sometimes it gets in the way of what other people want to do. That's one of the reasons I wanted to be on this commission when I was first asked to join. It's because we're told to only look at the merits of the historical properties. And it's the one time in my life that I can really begin to think about just the nominations, just whether or not a building, a bridge, a district, an archaeological site is eligible for the National Register several places. And I feel and I hear what people think about this. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I think it's fortunate in this sense that we're able to extract this body from the political realities of life. We're able to extract ourselves from the arguments that take place about whether something should be nominated. And we're just able to look at things in their terms of their historical value. I've seen too many buildings destroyed that are eligible. I've seen too many archaeological sites destroyed that are eligible. I've seen too much of our history, especially the history of voices of indigenous peoples, of other peoples here that we aren't taught about in the history books. I've seen too much that history has been ignored. And so this body must keep its charge to look at nominations just as they are, not as they reflect and how they impact economically, how they impact politically, how they impact socially. I believe that overall, the work that we do will make us a better state, will make us a better country, because that past that we have destroyed so often, we're forced to preserve. And like Commissioner Hoyo said, that doesn't mean that alterations can't happen. It doesn't mean that things can't be built around it. It just means that there is that we recognize the historical significance of things. Even though our job is sometimes difficult, I embrace that job and I embrace that charge.
Thank you, Commissioner Vilanowith. Oh, Commissioner Brandis, I was going to say something, but I saw your hand was up. Go for it.
Yeah. So, first of all, well said, Renee. I can't top that, and I agree with all your comments as well, Luis. I want to circle back around to Luis's original comment. Again, agree it's well written, but can we just go back to the parking lot? Is that, Jay? Is that really a requirement to? To the site. I mean, can we designate it without the parking lot?
Well, Brian, can I add something to your question before you answer, Jay? In Section 7 of the nomination, it requires a summary paragraph that is supposed to identify the contributing and non-contributing elements of a property. And in that paragraph, to Brian's question, it states that the east side of the building abuts an asphalt paved surface parking lot, which is part of the same parcel. And so to maybe expand on Brian's question, is the parking lot included in the nomination because you have to nominate everything that falls within that parcel? Because I don't believe that the summary paragraph identifies the parking lot itself as a contributing element to the property, and the character defining features listed for the building don't include the parking lot. So what is it because it's part of the parcel that it's within here, or is there other historic documentation that identifies the parking lot as a contributing element to the property, and that's just not clearly stated in the nomination? And Brian, I apologize for putting words in the mouth, but I was thinking the same thing, so.
Yeah.
I hope I answer the question. The parking lot would be considered part of the setting of the building. It would reflect the basic physical condition of the environment in which the building was constructed. And most importantly, in this case, it shows how the building was used. The nomination does discuss how sausage or the products of the company would be loaded on trucks and hauled away from there. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that the city zoned manufacturing out of the central city, partially because of the truck traffic. We also, as recently as this week, were reminded by our handlers in Washington that they really loathe nominations where the boundary is just the building. But Having said that, again, as Commissioner Oyo stated, the fact that the parking lot is part of the boundary of the National Register nomination in no way prevents the city of San Francisco from approving what they wish to approve for this property. So I hope that answers the question.
It does for me, Jay, and you know, I think we're all keen on the issues that are involved with this, and we have to ask these questions, and I think mine were more about the mechanics of the nomination and how those mechanics apply to that portion of the property that's being questioned. You know, it was the parking lot a contributing element to the historical significance of the building? Is there, you don't have to have a character defining feature that is the parking lot, I imagine, to say that it still served a purpose in the original purpose of the building itself. And I see Luis shaking his head. Is there any way you can help expand on that for me?
I will try, Chairman. I think you already said it. Buen Gusto was designed in a very intelligent way. The facade is on the sidewalk on the main street. The rest of the property was intelligently used as a parking lot to allow for the commercial operations to happen. You know, this is not New York City. We're different in San Francisco. So you need staging areas for trucks to move in. You need parking because we expect to have parking. So I think Jay Correa also stated it correctly that it is part of the setting for the building. The whole commercial enterprise of Buen Gusto was designed in a reasonable, commercially responsible way, and that's why you get the site plan that you have. But again, you can add to historic buildings. You could use the parking lot to build a building and accommodate parking for the housing wherever you need to accommodate the parking for the housing. So this is really, I don't see a big disagreement here. The architect is probably going to follow the standards. And the project will likely go forward. I don't see anything wrong happening here, but we're only voting on the narrow outline of our purview. That's it.
Commissioner Hess.
I'm reminded by what Commissioner Villeneuve said, what is our charge, which we're discussing here. And we are not the San Francisco Planning Commission, or planning department, but we do have an important role statewide in the whole issue of protecting, preserving historic sites. And in that case, I would agree with what the other commissioners have said here. I'd like to point out in particular that the nomination did talk a bit about Martin Rist, the architect, and the style of the building, international style. I would note that San Francisco, in many ways, Northern California, has not recognized or appreciated this post-war period as much as I feel that they should. But the style of this building, what this building brings, as well as its cultural history, is part of the larger charge that we have to oversee and protect and decide about. And it's part of the long process. There are many other steps in this process, of course, for any new building project, but this is our part. And so I would agree that in terms of our purview, what we are assessing, that the nomination raises important historical facts that do deserve to be recognized on the National Register level. Thanks.
A takeaway for me from this type of conversation is that my immediate connotation of a parking lot is it's benign, right? It's a parking lot. It's an empty asphalt covered lot. And it's hard to make that connection. But as we talk about the use of the building and the setting in which a parking lot contributes to that building's original purpose, which is to bring the food in and out and to serve as part of the function of what that building originally had, changes my connotation of what that parking lot served as. So I appreciate the conversation. Are there any other comments from commissioners? No, if not, at this point, I'd like to request a motion.
I will move to find the Buen Gusto building in San Francisco eligible to the National Register under criteria A and C.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, I would second that motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. And
before we move forward with a roll call vote, I would just like to clarify the motion. Commissioner Hoyos, without putting words in your mouth, did you also recommend that it meets criterion consideration G?
Yes, I do agree that it is acceptable for criteria G.
Okay. The seconder of the motion?
Second concurs.
Great. Thank you for that clarification.
Roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Adams?
Aye.
Commissioner Brandis?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Hess?
Aye.
Commissioner Hoyos?
Aye.
Commissioner McKay is not present. Commissioner Villanueva?
Aye.
Commissioner Schreiro?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries 7-0-0. And Chairperson Schreiro, if I could just make one comment. Director Quintero wanted me to let you all know that he had to step away to attend other meetings, but he thanks you very much for your work, and it was a pleasure for him to address and attend the commission meeting. So that's my message on his behalf.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you, everybody. The next item on our agenda is the National Register of Historic Places and California Register of Historical Resources update, progress report, sorry. And I believe Shippo Polanco has some updates for us.
I do. So in addition to what you see on the agenda, I wanted to let you all know that we've had the Latinos in the 20th Century California Multiple Property Submission, the update was approved. And then two nominations. The Brown Beret headquarters was determined eligible for the National Register, and the Chicano Moratorium was listed on the National Register. So those two nominations, and then that update have all been approved by the Keeper of the Register very recently. And again, just so excited about the diversity of the nominations that we have before us that really are representing our state.
Thank you. And I'll just ask that if you would like to get more information on the properties listed, you can refer to the agenda, which lists them all. Next is general public comments. So
I've got a few people who registered for this item, but I'm not sure if they actually wish to speak. So I'm just going to ask for whoever would like to speak on this general public comments, please raise your hand and I'll call on you in the order in which you raise your hand. Okay, it appears we have, I've got one person. All right, Mr. Iglesias, I'm going to allow you to talk. Please.
Sorry, quick question. Is this in general things, or can I have a last comment on the Buen Gusto thing, or is that closed?
The Buen Gusto nomination is closed. That item's been finished.
Can I comment on it?
You're certainly welcome to use your 3 minutes in public comment for anything you choose.
Fantastic. I just want to express my strong disappointment. I just find it rather disappointing that you're weighing whether or not to mark something historical or to nominate or label as something without considering a downstream effects. These type of decisions have strong effects downstream for other processes. And every time you do this, it costs the rest of society. I am truly, truly disappointed that we've decided that a parking lot, a slab of asphalt, is worthy of historical preservation. I just want you, as parts of, you know, people who represent society, to take into consideration the effects that your decisions have in the construction and the organization of this city. I am very saddened from what I'm seeing here, and I hope that you reconsider how you carry yourselves forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Iglesias. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on public comments? All right, Chairman Swero, no one else is asking to speak on this item.
Thank you. I know that we're going to lose Commissioner Brandis in 15 minutes, and I want to make sure that we try to move as quickly as possible. Will we still have a quorum if we lose one more commissioner?
Correct. Quorum is 5, so we're still good.
Okay. Commissioner Brandis, we're going to try to move as quickly as possible for you, buddy. Next is the commission discussion and action items on CRIS, which is the only thing that's listed there right now. Shippo Polanco, do we have any updates on CRIS discussion, or have things slowed down since quarantine?
We do, but if I might recommend, if we're going to lose Commissioner Brandis, that we take the election of the chairperson and vice chairperson out of order.
Oh, that's
so that he can vote, and then the rest of the items are non-voting items, so that would just give him the opportunity.
And we might have to update you on dates for next year if we don't make it that far with you present. So skipping to election of chairperson, which is agenda item number 14, we had a committee comprised of Commissioner Hoyos and Commissioner Hansen, who inquired on interest for our new chairperson. Would either one of you like to report out on your findings?
I'll go ahead and start, and Commissioner Hoyos, chime in as you see fit. So we did a poll of who might be interested in the chairperson or vice chairperson for 2021, and we do have a candidate, Lee Adams, who we wholeheartedly think would be a great nominee for chair. And we did not get any nominees or any volunteers for the vice chair position. But I do believe, correct me if I'm wrong, before we make a motion to nominate, we do need to ask from the floor if there are any other nominations.
Yes. Yes.
So does Chair Cerrero do that?
The nominating committee.
Oh, the nominating committee. Okay. Well, the nominating committee would like to know if there are any other nominees among the commissioners for the positions of chair or vice chair.
I'd like to make a recommendation.
Okay.
I'd like to make a recommendation that Commissioner Adam take the vice president or vice commissioner role to help Lee along next year, since he did such a good job for the last 2 years.
I think that's a great recommendation, and I certainly agree at the excellent job that he's done.
Luis, you're muted.
I'm sorry. Oh, Luis is muted. Luis.
Sorry, I the house was a little bit noisy. Could you repeat what was just said, please?
Sorry, Luis. I was just recommending making a recommendation that Adam take the vice chair to help Commissioner Lee along, since he did such a good job the last couple of years.
Well, if the chair will agree, it seems like an excellent choice. And we know that the responsibilities of the vice chair are definitely on the light side. So maybe our chairman will not mind.
I don't mind, and I am happy to help the commission whatever is best for this group of fine individuals. And I think Commissioner Adams would make a great chair and can't wait to work under him moving forward. It's been an incredible honor as chair. I've learned so much, and I can't imagine a bigger honor than continuing to help this commission up moving forward under Commissioner Adams' leadership. I think it's going to be awesome, and couldn't find a nicer guy.
Are there any other nominations before we close the nominations? Okay. Now, can we do these? Do we do these separately, the nominations? We do chair first and then vice chair. Can we do it as one nomination?
Because there appears to be no, you know, runoff election or any dissension, we could do it. You could do it as one motion.
Okay. We'd like to make that motion for Commissioner Lee for chairperson and Cerrillo for vice chairperson for 2021. Commissioner Adams, sorry, not Lee.
So Commissioner made the motion, so we're waiting for a second.
Oh, okay.
I'll second.
Okay. All right. I guess we need a roll call.
Okay. Commissioner Brandis.
Aye.
This was your idea.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Hess.
Aye.
Commissioner Hoyos.
Aye.
Commissioner McKay is not present. Commissioner Volanowith.
Aye.
And then finally, Commissioner Adams.
Aye.
And Commissioner Schreiro.
Aye.
Congratulations. Motion passes 7-0-0.
Excellent. Chairperson Adams, would you like to say anything as your new role?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Thank you all. Thank you for the trust. This will be a great honor. I had a side conversation with our current chair that I feel as though he got sort of cheated out of part of his year having to do things by Zoom. On the other hand, I realize what an effort having to do this by Zoom. I've kept all of his speaking points the last few meetings to keep me in some sort of order, and I appreciate what he has provided these last 2 years. I also want to comment that I know Janan, her career is one thing, but she should have considered becoming an air traffic controller, because I cannot believe what she has had to do these last two meetings, especially our last meeting, but this meeting today. So again, great respect for both Adam and Janan for what they've had to do doing this online. And thank you all.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. And Adam, thank you so much as well. Lee, I look forward to working with you, and thank you for the compliments to staff, especially. They work very hard. I just want to say that the chairman's speaker notes has a long, deep history that have been passed down from chairman to chairman since I started as well a million years ago. And I think they are born out of the brilliant work of the chief counsel, Tara Lynch. So there's a lot of history in that report as well.
I consider them the Dead Sea Scrolls now. They're very important.
Great. Well, and thank you to the committee for your good work.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I learned from Commissioner Brandis.
All right, everybody.
Chair Schreiro, do you maybe want to talk about the dates while we still have Commissioner Brandis, and then we can go into the Chris?
Absolutely. So we are looking at proposed dates for 2021. I'm assuming that at least the first quarter, if not a majority of these meetings, will still be virtual. We'll wait and see how that all plays out. Shippo Polanco, do we have proposed dates yet, or are we really looking at what dates don't work first?
We do. So we have January 28th and 9th, April 29th and 30th, July 29th and 30th, October 28th and 29th. And they are also listed on the agenda. I think two things. We don't vote on dates, if I remember correctly. Tara, is that correct?
That is correct. They can be set by the executive secretary yourself.
So we're really just noticing them to see if anybody has any issues. And the reason that we don't also want to vote on them, because you have to vote to undo them. And if we have changes for process or any procedural or anything else that comes up, like COVID, we want to be able to be flexible enough to move them around a bit without having to reconvene all of you.
I was wondering if, since it says Thursday and Friday, are there some plans to actually try and do some workshops next year? Even if there is
Yes. Okay. And we're hopeful, you know, hope springs eternal that we will be able to meet in person. I think that we're all learning a lot from these Zoom meetings, but I also feel like we miss so much by not being together in person, visiting communities and seeing sites and resources. So, and engaging with the public who attends our workshop. So we're hopeful we can. So if you're all good with those dates, we'll leave them penciled in. Please put them in your diaries as well. And then we can keep going. We'll figure out whether or not we need to change any of them. Also, I'll just reminder for the public that the spacing of the dates also comports to the timing regulations that we follow for the National Register. So just keep in mind that moving them is possible, significant shifts is usually not so easy to do because of those timing requirements for noticing and acceptance and things like that. So I just wanted to put that statement out there for the public's information as well. And while we're on the topic of workshops, we have one more meeting that we need to plan for this year. And I heard back from some of you, but not all of you, and I will not ask you to respond in this meeting, but to send me an email and let me know your availability. We're looking at the week of, I think most of you responded the week of December 7th through 11th. You were available, those who did respond. So if you could let me know, maybe 4-hour chunks of time, and we're looking at between 7 and 11 and probably in the morning. So from like 8 to noon or 9 to noon, that would be super helpful. So if you could just send an email to me and copy Janon, that would be great. And then we'll get that started. And just as a reminder too, that workshop is will serve as the fourth meeting of the commission. So it'll be publicly noticed. We are going to be inviting California state agencies to participate. There was a question about whether federal agencies could participate. And the answer is anybody's welcome to the extent that we have capacity in the Zoom meeting. So yes, is the answer.
Great, and I'd like to also suggest that the dates listed, maybe you could take a look after the meeting is over and ensure that if there's a fatal flaw, you can reach out to OHP. Brian, I think you're about to leave, right?
Yeah. I thank you very much for reorganizing it real quick. I apologize. I've got to jump on another call. But congratulations, Lee. You will do an excellent job. It was nice seeing you all. And I definitely agree. It will be nice to see everybody in person. But just one point, I think we should be able to have Zoom as an access for the public, even when we do meet in person, because we have, you know, so many more attendees than we normally do. So hopefully we can continue that at least when we're in person. Again, thank you very much. And I'll echo the comments as well as Janon. You did a great job. So thank you very much. And one last thing, as always, Jay, Amy, William always do a great job. So thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks.
Good to see you.
He's missing the Chris update.
Yeah.
So everybody, if you don't mind, even those that responded, just send me a quick note, email with copy Jill and just send the dates. And remember, we're talking about the National Register and the Cal Register in this workshop. So that's the update on that. Should I just roll right into the Chris update?
That'd be great.
Okay, perfect. Sorry, my computer just, of course, crashed. So hold on just one second. Technology is our friend. So an update about the CRIS operations since the COVID shelter in place. It hit most of the ICs pretty hard as they're housed in universities, and they were having pretty big, heavy restrictions. The ICs tried to work within them and still respond to record searches and as best and number assignments as best they could. No ICs have reopened for in-person record searches yet. And it also has resulted in the slowdown of the digitization on each of the ICs without people and equipment on site. That's been relegated to nearly impossible. Most of the ICs report that they've been able to maintain a standard turnaround time, but some are having difficulty being busier, responding to emergencies, et cetera. Junon, as our current IC coordinator, is going to send out to the IC host next week requests for updates and plans about resuming normal operation levels and turnaround times for searches. It's something that we're aware of. We've been sort of struggling about how to address, and we really want to work with the ICs to figure out how to get ourselves back in a place to provide that level of information to our public. We plan to have an annual report and a digitization update for you at the Q1 meeting in 2021. So that's the update from the centers themselves. On a happy note, our office has made substantial progress on digitization despite the shutdown. We've had, as I reported to you, I think before, the supervisor, Joseph McDowell, had the foresight to have the students who do the majority of our work in that regard just do a whole lot of scanning prior to COVID. And what that resulted in was the ability then for the students to maintain their work by doing data entry remotely. So that was just really great. And over the past year, more than 2,500 project files were digitized and data and their resources were added to the inventory. So that is really, really great and amazing. And we're continuing to take big chunks out of our backlog. We've just put in place a $90,000 contract for scanning and capturing the metadata that we anticipate will digitize at least 75% of our backlog paper files. So we hope by the end of this contract, the Office of Historic Preservation's backlog will be substantially minimized, if not completely eliminated. I say the second part with a lot of great hope. But the other thing I'm really happy to report is that because we've gone to an electronic submission process for our consultations, the backlog creation has nearly stopped. We get few consultations by paper. So the sort of silver lining of that change to process to accommodate the current situation has really shown us the value of that digitization or receiving that information digitally at the beginning and not creating that backlog. So while we are also taking big chunks out of the problem, we're also not creating a problem. So I feel really happy and successful about that, and I'm glad to be able to report it to you. State Parks is still working in earnest on our single system project. You'll remember this is the container to take all the digitized information into one source. And we anticipated that it would create for us a digitized E106 or so as electronic submission process for things that come to our office as well. That is still on the table. With the shift to teleworking for everybody, our IT department has been a little bit distracted and I should say not distracted, but otherwise engaged in helping State Parks and all of our stuff stay working. So that slowed just a bit. I hope to have a better progress report for you in January, but I'm happy to say it's still a project that's alive and moving. And I think in some ways will help with this new situation. We've learned a lot about what our needs are, and we'll have the opportunity to make those shifts in this process in ways that I think will make it a better product. So that's the update from CRIS. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have or field any comments or make notes of anything you'd like us to consider for the Q1 meeting report.
Julie, is there any way to receive that report prior to the meeting so that we can show up with questions?
Yes, I'll be happy to do that.
Excellent, thank you.
Yeah, the next one will be more substantial, the next update, so for the Q1 meeting. So we'll be sure to get it to you all in time. One thing I will say is I know that everyone's having, we're all on digital overload, but it's really important to check your state parks emails at least once a week, and particularly when we get close to the meeting dates. We push out a lot of notices and sometimes questions for all of you. And all the information, obviously, on how to log in will be there as well. So just as a reminder, if folks could check, and if you are having trouble getting in, let us know. We'd be happy to help you. Renee, I think we'll send you a new password or make sure that happens. But just remember to put that on your many list of things to do, especially as we get closer to the commission meeting. And other than that, I have nothing more to report, Chairman Schruro, except to say it's been such a pleasure to work with you. You're organized and smart and capable and delightful and efficient. And I really appreciate the work we've done together, especially. And I know that staff does as well, and look forward to working with you as the vice chair. And same with Commissioner Adams, now soon to be Chairperson Adams. We really look forward to working together. And thanks to all the commissioners, I should say that as well. You all continue to do such good work for the public and be very thoughtful in your deliberation, your comments. And it's such an honor to work with all of you.
Thank you. Very kind words.
I do have some members of the public who wanted to speak on the Chris item, if the commissioners are done having a discussion about it.
Yeah, the last item was going to be commissioner comments, but if we have public comments on Chris' discussion, let's do that now.
I'm actually, for folks who are attendees, I'm going to call on you in the order in which you registered. So first, I will be calling on Michelle Cross. Ms. Cross, I'm allowing you to talk. You need to unmute yourself, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Excellent. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone, for allowing me to participate today. I am calling in representing the Society for California Archaeology. I am the current president for the Society for California Archaeology. We would like to come to the Resources Commission to just express our concerns over the delays in access for record searches at some of the Chris centers, both due to COVID and wildfire constraints. These concerns have been brought to us from our membership. Please note, our membership includes over 1,000 California archaeologists, both working professionally as well as educators. This has been brought up by numerous members as a concern. And that is further exacerbated by the fact that not all the record centers are up to date in terms of digitization. If you look to other states, you do see that they are much further along and developed in terms of digitization. And so this is also a concern of ours. We are urging the Resources Commission and the Office of Historic Preservation to look to find additional funding to make sure that California gets up to speed in terms of access for digital records, both uploading and downloading. This is causing significant delays to critical California infrastructure projects and development projects where an access to looking at what's been previously recorded and or surveyed is critical for planning these projects. And if we're not able to get that access in a timely manner, we may be missing critical information. So that is our plea today. With that said, the Society for California Archaeology has formed a task force specifically to look at these issues and to aid in ongoing digitization and access for CRIS centers. So we also offer our services or ourselves as members that would like to be involved and consulted as further discussions go forward. Definitely have a strong contingent and can provide timely and pertinent feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cross. Next on my list is Brian Mutch. I'm allowing you to talk. Unmute yourself and you'll have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, commissioners. Chapo Polanco, thank you for your time. Joining in to say hello. Also, just to let you make sure you're aware, at least in terms of the CRIS, when we had a commissioner, an IC coordinator retire last year, Amy Huberlin, I was tasked with being the SCA liaison to from the CRIS. And so I've been part of these conversations and trying to work with the SCA board on resolving some of their concerns and taking things to the IC coordinators directly. Things have been moving, maybe not as fast as we'd all like, but you know, from certain perspectives, things have gotten, quote, better. I know some of the turnaround times at some of the ICs have improved. Some of the other ones, not as much as we'd all like. That being said, as things move along, please know, as always, here to help work through these problems. The other thing, just to alert, as given the commission approved our CRIS access and use agreement, we did have our probably most formal information data breach that occurred a couple months ago or a month ago. And we're working through kind of that process as a contractor had data that was hacked and ransomed. And as that process is unwinding, I guess one of the things to alert the commission, one of the authorized uses fall into the CRIS Access and Use Agreement, this notion of conditional users and authorized users and who should be holding the data and how it was acquired seems to be coming back up again. And I just bring it up to alert the commission as approvers of that document that, you know, there are some concerns being raised about appropriate and inappropriate uses of the CRIS data and how it was acquired and how it's being redistributed. And we're working to gather information from the affected companies, not much data specific about that situation has been returned back to the ICs, but we're kind of still waiting for some of those forensic analyses, if you will, to be done. But I figured it was warranted to bring it to the commission's attention that this did occur. In terms of the larger digitization process, you know, some of us are still moving forward and have been mapping all these lovely resources in good time. And we look forward to receiving the digitized products from the OHP scanning efforts so we can begin drawing shapes for those to complete that process. As OHP gets the document scans, that does more efficiently allow the ICs to then map those resources once the documents have been digitized, scanned, if you will. So I wanted just to say hi and thank you, as always, for your support and time and available at any point for follow-up.
Thank you, Brian. Next on my list is Margo Nayar, I believe it is. Oh, no, you are not here. Let's see, who else? Stacy St. James, I'm allowing you to talk. Please unmute yourself and you will have 3 minutes.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I was one of the centers that people had some concerns about getting a product out quickly. We did make some significant strides. To be clear, we are digital for LA Orange and Ventura County for the most part. Our ongoing digitization efforts for San Bernardino have been significantly hampered since COVID. I have an office of 3 full-time employees, and we manage LA Orange, Ventura, and San Bernardino counties. In addition to having 16 to 20 clients normally come in our office each week, we processed a significant amount of record searches for our clients when the clients submit them directly to us for processing. So having to cancel about a month and a half's worth of appointments early on when COVID hit, getting all that, all those record searches done for our clients, in addition to all the incoming stuff that was now going to have to come directly to my staff for processing. I am happy to report that what was looking like about an 8 to 10 week lead time early on has significantly dropped now that we've gotten a significant portion of our clients to ask for digital data instead of having us draw them custom maps for all their projects. A lot of times these record searches from our clients are not just one location, but they can be hundreds of locations. So you can imagine what drawing hundreds of custom maps in a digital format for them was doing to the lead time. It took a while. I'm happy to report that in a lot of cases now we're getting those digital record searches back out to clients who are requesting shape files in less than 2 weeks. So while San Bernardino still poses problems because it's not fully digital, LA Orange and Ventura have very, very much improved lead times. We have, let's see, what else did I want to let you know? I think early on, what we discovered was a lot of people were using the information center staff as an adjunct to their own employee staff, in that they were having us do a lot of things that, for them, for their projects, that they didn't have to necessarily pay someone in their own offices to do. And when the lead times got longer and longer because we were doing so many more record searches for our clients who could no longer come into our office, I think it became very clear to them that asking us to provide them with digital data did make a big difference in getting the data back to them as quickly as possible. So yes, ongoing efforts for digitization are in place. I'm not sure that the SCA board knows all of the things that are going on with digitization, but I think Ray Bryan can get them up to speed. And so they understand exactly what's been happening.
Thank you, Stacy.
Thank you.
And then the last person on my list who signed up for this item was Barbara Zerwinski. I'm going to allow you to talk. You need to unmute yourself and you will have 3 minutes. I wasn't sure if you wanted to speak on this item, but you did register for it. So. I'll ask you to unmute one more time just to make sure.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're okay. You did not want to speak on this item?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Did anyone else want to speak on this agenda item? Please raise your hand. Okay, with that, Chairman Swiro, we are done with public comments for this agenda item.
Thank you. The last item are commissioner comments.
Before you move to commissioner comments, can I just address the SCA question, the SCA comments, and just to say that the Office of Historic Preservation and the State Historic Resources Commission absolutely agree that digitization is a top priority for us and one that we've all been working diligently to try to uncover any stone, put in grants with FEMA and others to take care of. And you have our commitment that that will continue. I just thought it was important to acknowledge those comments from SCA. And you're certainly welcome to contact our office at any time with any of those comments or suggestions. If you would like as well. So I just wanted to acknowledge those comments and restate that we are all in the same place in that position, that we really are striving to get this done as soon as possible for all the reasons you state and many, many more.
Thank you. And Michelle and Brian, I'm happy to participate in any of the conversations you guys are having about this topic, and I'm dialed into it. I'm familiar with some of the issues. So please, if you feel like that's something that would benefit the conversation, send me an invite, let's talk, and I'm happy to help, at least from my role here. Commissioner comments then. Anything else under that agenda item? Commissioner Adams.
Adam, I just feel compelled to compliment you on the last 2 years as chair. It's been an unbelievably well-organized 2 years. It's an honor enough to be a member of this commission. You're going to be a very tough act to follow, and I'm glad you're put this ship on the rocks. So I'm glad you're there as well. But again, congratulations for the last 2 years.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. Thanks, everybody. Any other comments? No, then a hearty thanks to everybody involved. Meeting is adjourned. We'll talk to everybody soon.
Okay. Bye, everybody.